going on, people out there? It's currently Monday, the 19th. This is the third episode of the Hacksaw Laser Show. Make sure you go check out our friends at www.bfallradio.com and www.binrev.com for other further sites, and also textfiles.com. And you can also hit up our main directory at 206-888-5819. As for the show that you are listening to right now is archived. So make sure you go and hit that up. Our regular laser voicemail number that we do our non-archived shows on is 206-208-3044. So go check that. All right. Currently tonight, our special guest is Jason Scott of TextFiles.com. Everybody post who they are. We have Hairball.
Hello.
We got Avid.
Hey.
Chisel.
Yo.
We got Saba.
Hey.
We got Low Tech.
What's going on?
Jason Scott.
Ahoy.
And anybody else who I didn't name. And that's it. So we'll go ahead and start up the show. Hairball.
Yes.
Anything new?
I'm now affiliated with Scope 6 Research, officially, and that's working out great.
All right. Avid, anything new?
Nope.
Kizzle?
Nope.
Anything anybody would like to promote?
Of course, hackermedia.net/Hacksaw, H-A-X-O-R, where the show archives will be.
Nice. So, Jason, can you please explain to everybody what it is you do and, like, what you're currently involved in?
Okay. I'll try to make it as short as possible. Don't be afraid to cut me off. I'm a talker.
Oh, that's okay.
Basically, what I do is I used to be a kid who was really into bulletin board systems from about 1981, got away from them around 1990 when I discovered that I could use a phone number at MIT to get onto internet over at the GNU.ai.mit.edu machine back when RMS's password was still RMS. Sometime in 1998, I was idly deciding to look for something from an old BBS I liked, and I couldn't find any mention of it. And I thought, this is crazy. This is the greatest BBS that ever existed, Sherwood Forest 2, back in the 914 area code. And then I started to look for other BBSs I knew, and I couldn't find any of them. They weren't anywhere on the web. And I said, but the web's got everything. Why doesn't it have this? So then I went and got my old collection of text files from 5 1/4-inch disks, found out that textfiles.com was not taken, registered that, and started to put together a site. And it grew from my initial collection, of which I thought was incredible, of 9,000 files, up to where it is now with the main site's got 50,000 files, the ancillary sites probably have a few hundred thousand more of various types, and I became known for that. I slowly expanded the mission of textfiles.com because people started to give me new text files, which was kind of not what I needed. I wanted the old stuff, but here people are giving me stuff they wrote because they got inspired finally reading some of these old files. So I created web.textfiles.com, and people were making really cool PDFs. So now there's pdf.textfiles.com, and then I discovered hacker radio programs, and that became audio.textfiles.com. So basically, over time, my mission expanded until now I collect pretty much most kind of historical computer lore in whatever format gets presented. And as time has gone on, this has slowly taken over my life. And sometime in 2001, I decided I'd make a list of every BBS there ever was. I thought that'd be a fun little project. And the scripting behind it was pretty simple, and within a very short time, I had 45,000 BBSs listed and suddenly got flash dotted. And so many people wrote to me that I said, you know, somebody's ought to do a documentary on these guys, but nobody ever has. Obviously, they're never going to, because it's 2001 already. So I started working on a project called BBS Documentary, which is bbsdocumentary.com, and I've been working on that ever since. I finished filming, basically, in January. I have 200 interviews in the can, and I've been editing. And that's, you know, so between those projects, that's what I'm up to. I've got bigger projects, unbelievably, in the future, but that's what I'm doing right now.
Wow, that is massive.
How much hard drive space do you have? You know the old tricks you can play with that? It's kind of like Torstar. Do you mean how much hard drive space is connected to machines functioning in my house, or just the textfiles.com machine, or what?
Oh, 40 got total. I mean, for a project like this, it has to be astronomical.
6 terabytes.
Oh, my God.
But, again, like I said, that's part of that is because of video. A 1 hour of mini DV video is 13 gigabytes.
Ouch.
So if you're editing stuff down, you got to be able to pull in the tape, 13 gigs, and edit it down to, say, 5 minutes of good interview answers, and that's still 2 or 3 gigs, and it builds up. So I've been kind of skirting that cutting edge of acceptable price. Like, I just got, like, I don't know why, but since this CompUSA just did a sale where they were doing 250 gigs for $160.
Oh, very nice.
So I ran around like a bitch trying to get that stuff. And I'm always buying USB drives. I get in a lot of trouble with some purists because a lot of my storage is USB 2. You know, I don't RAID. I use the poor man's RAID. I have a synchronizer that synchronizes video between two disks. But it's good for me, you know. And over time, I slowly expand how many I have. Plus, I collect other stuff, right? I mean, it's not just video. It's if I see a website that's pretty cool, I download it.
Nice.
You know,
well, if I had that kind of hard drive space, I'd be doing that too.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what goes on. Right now, I used to host at another facility, but then Speakeasy gave me a good deal, so I have a T1 into the house, and I just constantly pull data of whatever. So, I mean, I'm a real sucker for. How do I put it? There's that weird quality. There's certain stuff that I really like. A good example, if I had to explain or give an example that wasn't historical, or actually it is somebody created a disassembled, commented version of the Atari 2600 combat cartridge. They went through the source code of it and completely commented it so you can see exactly how they programmed it. I love that shit. And so I grab that kind of stuff. Or somebody will make a PDF that's of some really cool concept of, like, what was one? Oh, a complete breakdown of why Infocom, the company that made Zork and Planetfall and these other tech adventures, failed, where they went and they interviewed all the people in 1999 and found out why they think it failed.
Huh.
I love that stuff. I just love putting that stuff up. And based on the traffic that I do, a lot of people seem to like it. I get about you have to play the trick, right? There's 14, 15 websites that I run. So I could sit there and combine them all and go, I get the following. And I don't play that crap of saying hits. I get this many hits. That's like counting how many footsteps you hear in a city to figure out the population.
Yeah, really.
So I get about 200,000 people a month, something like that, who come and visit. And the number one reason, by the way, because everyone, of course, wants to know, what's the number one reason people come to Text Files? And the answer is to download ASCII Middle Finger.
Really?
Yeah, that's the number one thing, far and away, ASCII Middle Finger. Middle Finger.
Not even bomb instructions?
What?
Not even bomb instructions?
No. Far
middle
Finger. Far and distant away. Right after 9/11, people started downloading ASCII Middle Finger.
Really?
and that's what it was. Yep. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. That's pretty much been my my audience. I don't, you know, you don't ask, right? You know about the thing called the Google Zeitgeist? Ever heard of that? Google Zeitgeist, Zeitgeist, I believe that's how it's spelled. They'll correct you. And they do this interesting report every few months where they kind of tell you the state of what people are looking for. And it's kind of really cool because they'll do things like 10 celebrities' names, like Britney Spears, Madonna, Janet Jackson, and they'll show the graph showing where more and more people search for them and then went away, and then they try to figure out what is that happened. And you always see these interesting, when you have this much data, you can't help it. You want to see, why are people doing this? What are they, you know, what's their deal? So that's what that whole situation is. But it's a popular site. I get people contacting me. I wasn't aware in the beginning. I started this in 98. I wasn't really aware how popular it was, and over time I've become aware how popular it is. So it's been kind of an interesting experience now to run into people who go, you know, like, oh, you're that guy. I get this from you. you know, in terms of, I will address that, the bomb-making information, you know, that's not my, I mean, it's one of those things, right? It's like you, you know, should you get rid of the racist cartoons, the Warner Brothers cartoons? Should you destroy them? Or if you're going to have the complete Warner Brothers cartoons, you got to kind of include them. It's the same studio. And along that same line, I really can't say, well, not this one. This isn't acceptable. But this one over here, how to, you know, ruin your parents' dinner party. That one should be saved of all time.
Right.
You know, I mean, and where do you stop with that? So I kind of just kind of shied away from that. The only time I have deleted stuff, or actually, you know, deleted it, actually, is child porn erotica. I've had to delete that because there are actual cases of guys going to jail for years.
Or just hosting.
For having it, yeah.
Even though you're referring to ASCII format?
Just a text file describing producing a child.
Jeez.
There are laws where if you make stories or think about, you know,
yes,
like raising a child, that it's actually, I think it might be in Canada, it's almost as bad as the actual thing.
Yeah, virtually raping a child, that's exactly the doctrine I'm talking about. Where I just love talking about this stuff, but, you know, basically the legal theory behind it is, you know, the rape of a virtual child is a crime similar to the rape of a real child because it will lead to the rape of a real child. This is the argument. Somehow it's won enough ground that people have actually gone to jail for years for it. So that's the only thing that I'm like, okay, stepping away, and I delete the stuff. However,
but you're not scared of the bomb information, though.
Well, I mean, scared is an interesting term.
Well, have you ever had any problems with people complaining about your content?
Oh, hell yeah.
Anything ever come of it? Any
like special law enforcement?
I get cease and desist about 2-3 times a month. What else do I get? Well, the biggest one, for instance, was, I don't mind talking about this because it was a case.
Right.
I was hosting some file. Again, this is one of these things. I mean, I have 50,000 goddamn files. I don't know what every one of them has. I know what a lot of them have.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a concept known as the Lanham Act, the concept of punishment of the trademark. Mm-hmm. See, it's one of the things that really surprises me. I mean, you know, hackers, unfortunately or fortunately, due to 2600 and so on, hackers have to become somewhat cognizant of the law, the legal landscape they live in.
Mm-hmm.
But that's so boring. So the only time they end up learning it is when they're on the rough end of it.
Right.
And the Lanham Act, the concept behind the Lanham Act is tarnishing of a trademark, which is a total example of the winning of capitalism over logic. And in this principle, telling people or inciting people to misuse a trademarked item diminishes that item. And this is fully accepted. So, for instance, I'm a staff writer for Rotten.com, and we've had situations where we had pictures of women sodomizing themselves with Coke bottles. And Coke contacts us and says, you're diminishing the Coke trademark by using it for sodomy. And they would win. They would win damages if we continued to do it. So we have to kind of, you know,
Photoshop that out, right?
Yeah, Photoshop what it is, what they're putting in. The distinctive shape of the bottle. They've actually trademarked it. Anyway, so in my case, one day I get a letter from Piper Rudnick, who some people think they're really cool and some people think they aren't. I don't know where I am on them ultimately, but they basically said, you have a file on your site something called a works bomb. And in a works bomb, you make a bomb using works household cleaner. And the file specifically says, choose works household cleaner. It works the best. So they write me and they say, you know, hey, get rid of that. You can't have that. We work for Biogen. And, of course, there's a point of pride if you're working for a company called Biogen,
right.
Owner of works household cleaner, and you can't have a file up telling people to do illegal acts with it. So I contact the ESF, and I contact a few other people, and they basically come back with, yeah, they have a case, don't do it. And I'm like, oh, shucks. So I go in and I edit it. And I edit it, and like I told them, I've gone in and I've removed every occasion of your client's trademark and replaced it with the word Cox. And while I'll entirely understand if your company also has a trademark on the word Cox, I will assume for the moment that they do not. And it's that's where they left it. And then sometime later, it turned out there was another obscure file I had that also mentioned using, apparently this is pretty popular, saying using Work Household Cleaner again, and I had to go in and change it again, and so on. I've gotten people, there was a long time ago, a day after the Trenchcoat Mafia went through Columbine,
all right.
somebody registered trademark.org, and, trenchcoat.org, and said, hey, everybody, woohoo, you know, the Trenchcoat Mafia, we're rocking whatever. And they linked to me. They linked to my bump section. He said, you know, keep things going. And I was like, oh, fuck. I got an awful lot of mail. The way that I found out about it was that I started to get hundreds of emails. I was just like, how dare you? Actually, one-third said, how dare you? And in various indications indicated what a evil, bad, poor person I was. One-third wanted to join the Trenchcoat Mafia. And one-third had heard the Trenchcoat Mafia was coming to their town and wanted to know what was going on. It was a very interesting insight into the psyche of the teenagers. But a couple people really took me to task and very personally took me to task and said, you will kill people. And the fact is that I go out of my way on my site to say, don't do these things. Don't follow them. I mean, if you read old Jim Crow, one moment. If you read old Jim Crow stuff, and you shouldn't be inspired to go out and lynch people. If you go out and you read like old, you know, anarchist manuals, you shouldn't be inspired to go be an anarchist. I mean, it's not a. I don't like the implied causality. How about that?
Right.
You know, and that's what they try to say, but. You know, it's really surprising. I assume someday they will come for me. And that's just an assumption. But I can't live my life in fear. It's just no way to live. So you do what you do. You keep the high road. You try not to mess things up, because that's the most common problem, right? Turns out that, what was his name? The drink or die guy. Was it ISO News? The one who went down? He went down not because of the site he was running, but because he was also selling mod chips domestically. Mm-hmm. Goes down for that, and along the way they grab him for the other thing.
Yeah.
That's the problem. You get guys who are like really pro-gun. You know, they're perfectly reasonable libertarian types, plus they're growing dope in their backyard. And then off they go, right? I try to live my life not perhaps exemplary, but I certainly don't dabble in, I mean, I've never taken drugs. I don't keep drugs. All my weapons are legally registered. You know, I mean, I don't put myself into positions where I am, where I've got other things to hide. What's on the site is on the site.
Right.
There's no other section. You're not going to get the secret backdoor section on techfiles.com.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
You just killed the myth.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly it. Actually, there is a site that's not public, but only because I don't need all the trouble. It's cd.techfiles.com, as in compact disc. That's like 40 or 50 shareware CDs.
Right.
From those early 90s. I keep that around because I need it for research. People will say, oh, I did this and this and this, and I'll go back and I can verify it. Look for their name, look for their information. And since those were done before there was any political interest in being a part of history.
Right.
Anyway, you know, I did it. Nobody interrupted me. There must be other questions.
Does anybody have any questions?
I got a really good compliment. You have so many mirrors on your site. I think that it's going to be impossible to make those files go away. How did you manage to get such support where everyone wants to mirror your site?
Well, a lot of that, okay, I think part of it, there's several reasons why, I think. First of all, I'm very open about, it's a very personality-driven site. You kind of know me if you know the site. It's not a, we are the masters of Barbizon, and the MOBs in your town, we rock Pimp, yeah, fuck you. It's not this big front. it's not a it's not a hey look at me, you know, we're this gang.
It's more
a guy.
Of a just pure service as opposed to an egotistical, you know, I'm cool because I do this type website.
Yeah, that's what I get from it, that you're just providing a service.
I get away from, for instance, I don't do ads.
That's another question I had for you.
Yes.
Is you have so many text files on so many different topics. It's got to be real. You have to fight the urge to want to put on Google AdWords because they would be so relevant, and you would probably make so much money off of it.
There's an essay on there called Why Text Files Doesn't Advertise, which goes into my rant about why I don't do it. And it's a relatively, it's one of those things. It's whenever you get into anything political, you
try to catch every angle.
Well, you sort of put yourself in the position of people not agreeing with you, right? I mean, I suddenly come out against a candidate, or I come out for a something. I can really, whatever. But I'm a there. The thing is that one of the things that I predate the web, right? I mean, I was on the internet 1989, 1990, and I was on BBSs before that, and so I got to watch what happened. And there is this thing that kids buy into, and it's primarily children who buy into it, mostly, which is if you get a lot of traffic, you must, instead of looking at that as a gift, instead of looking at it as something that's an indication of that people believe in what you're doing, instead it's looked at as some sort of vague business possibility, some sort of exploitable resource that isn't going to go away. If you've got a running stream by your house that you must put some sort of electric turbine on it and harvest it, or even worse, by some of the opinions, what a great way to get rid of all your garbage. And again, it's not a hippy trippy thing. I'm a pretty staunch libertarian. So when I see kids do things like, one of my favorites are these kids will have these hacker sites up, right? It'll be we are the flaming nozzles or whatever, and they'll put up this site, right? And they'll have a banner for like that lies to you. It says click this and you will win $100,000, or you are the winner. You are, and these kids will do it, and they will have up text files for download. You know, a whole nine. Or 15, or then you'll see this whole other situation, which is again an interesting sociological thing. But
well, let me guess, they're having links to your files on their website.
Oh well, they're the scum of the earth. We'll go there.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the stuff where they're like, you can come in, but you have to click through these three ads and tell me what the third word on the second paragraph is.
Ah, I remember those. I had
old Twitter.
Yeah, they're going to be sucking Hitler's cock in hell, because, you know, but the thing is, it's that kind of thinking. I don't know how to put it. It's like you've got a bunch of friends who come over to your house and hang out, right? And they come over, and you have such a great time, and you think, wow, these friends always come over. What a great time. I'll bet I could make money off this. I'll charge them $5 to come into my house.
And you wonder why they stop coming.
And then you wonder why they stop coming. Then you wonder what's going on. And then you start doing other desperate moves, right? You start trying to... It's artificial scarcity. And one of the things textfiles.com does is it totally blows that scarcity out.
Basically, the way I'm reading into this is the fact that you've been on the internet so long, you've seen it since before there was any advertisements or any commercial activity allowed. And you also see how that whenever advertising started to hit, how it sort of ruined everything, and you don't want to contribute to that. Is that basically...
My belief basically extends to the fact that I hate marketers. I hate them, totally hate them. That's what my essay goes off about. They look at every blank surface as a place you can put an ad. They look at every social gathering as an opportunity to scream about their products. They look at every communications medium as something that they can choke off
from research
and charge you. And And I never believed in that, and I hate that. And so when you start saying to yourself, you know, that's how you buy in, right? As I say to myself, geez, 150,000 people look at my site. Right now, let's say on textfiles.com, that main page, about 5,000 people look at it every day. And do I look at them as fans? Do I look at them as tourists? Do I look at them as people who are just stopping off and getting something for free?
Okay, well,
or do I look at them as like little nickels coming in? You know, and I can't get that. I can't do that.
Well, you put a lot of personal time, and you have a T1 line run your house just for this website. There has to be a huge personal out-of-pocket expense.
Yeah.
And advertising, if I saw you put up advertising, I wouldn't think, wow, this guy's an asshole. He's trying to make money off me. I think this guy is trying to pay and trying to just, you know, break even running the service for me.
You have to remember, though, if you're advertising, it means that you're trying to make money. And when you have, like, information that is sensitive is what's on, you know, on the site, when you start trying to charge for it, it puts them in, you know, it puts you into a kind of a tricky situation.
Well, by all means, the information remains free. Whenever you got servers to buy and you got 4 terabytes for the hard drives to maintain and all this stuff, I mean, a small little banner is totally, you know, acceptable. But then again, once you start doing that, you might, you know, wow, this is working great. I should do this more often, you know.
That's where we differ. I don't even think the small banner is acceptable. When I have my mirrors, you see, the mirrors partially mirror me because they know this is what I do. And for them, it's kind of the impression I've gotten with the different mirrors is it's kind of a status symbol to them. Certainly, I know the Hungarians were that way. I know that the Chaos Computer Club people thought it was a bit of attrition. When they were one of my mirrors, they actually moved away from it. Attrition with the mirror for a while. It's like, hey, we now host 100,000 old BBS tech files. Mm-hmm. We brought it.
I think it's a privilege to be able to just bob to do that.
Yeah, I don't like that.
So I always encourage that. And then when we have, I've had people contact me, and they're like, okay, but we have to have a banner at the top of one of the pages. And I'm like, well, then you're not mirroring me. However, feel free to download all of my files and put them up if you want. I'm just not going to list you as a mirror. And people have done that. There are mirrors of mine that aren't mine, quote unquote.
Right.
And that's also why I had the torrent up. I've taken it down temporarily, but that's why I had the BitTorrent, which is so that people could just download the whole site. Because that's how
good
I know.
Idea.
Well, it didn't make any sense for me to spend 5 years collecting all this stuff and then play some sort of ass cockery with some sort of, you know, thinking it's mine because I collected it. I didn't write these files.
Right.
And this way I ensure that my work isn't lost, because at some certain point you have to stop linking something to your own personal biological function, which is not something that programmers like to do. So if you don't do that, eventually you're gonna get hit by a motorcycle, you're gonna drown in your hot tub, you're gonna do something stupid, and then suddenly your whole life is this tattered piece of crap that you left behind, especially if you think you're doing something for the betterment of people, which is what I'm doing, or what I think in my mind. So I try to
immortality.
Well, I've tried to ensure that in some way or another the stuff will be passed around. I tell people, grab it.
I
shove
think
it on
you succeeded. I think
yeah,
you succeeded.
I'm like, grab it, stick it on a DVD, don't think about it. Stick it in a
time capsule.
Yeah, well, 1999, I told people, and I thought, and this turned out to work out very well. At the time, I said, my biggest hope was that this was, the problem is that Wearzing always goes for the largest files. That's just a human nature. If you see 3 files for download, you can only download one. And it's these 3 games. One game is, you know, 200 meg. One game is 600 meg. One game is 4 gig. You're like, wow, that 4 gig game, that has to rock the box. And you go and you grab it. Unless, of course, it's made by, you know, someone who sucks. But, you know, you grab it sight unseen because you're like, oh, you know, this is going to be like 6 CDs. That's bitching. Well, in the same way, I knew that if my site was small, or you could only pull these little 5K files, they'd get lost in the world. So I said my dream was that eventually all of textfiles.com would become aware, and people would go, hey, what do you have? Oh, I have the 2nd season of Red Dwarf. What do you have? Oh, every BBS text file that was ever written in the 80s. Oh, fair trade. I'll take that. And so that's what happened with BitTorrent, was that I created these 600 meg compressed files of text files. And I know there's been a few hundred downloads of it, and I started seeing it show up on eDonkey in places. So I can't touch it. It's gone. It's out there. I couldn't find it if you told me. And people burn them on DVDs and completely forget about them, put them next to 500 discs of anime. And it's just like, oh, here's Ranma, here's X-Files.com, whatever the fuck that is. Oh, here's, you know, here's Baldur's Gate. And so for me, it's like, this is what I had hoped in the first place. Is it because BBS is just by the nature, they didn't cross over into internet, so now in this world, we no longer have that same fear that things will disappear. Now you're fucked. You upload that, you know, you break up with your girlfriend, you upload a picture of the two of you fucking, you're screwed. They're all of the time. You know, high school students going to be jerking off to it in 2300. I mean, it's just going to be, you're screwed. I mean, what's it going to do? You know, you're not going to be able to get rid of it. And with textiles.com, that's basically what happened. So in terms of, to get back to the original thing, I don't hurt for cash, I guess, by some standards. I mean, I make six figures. I don't really, you know, I'm not starving, and I don't do drugs, and I don't drink. I've never had a drink. That's a lot of saved money.
Right.
And nothing makes me happier in that stupid nerd way of, like, seeing my router blinking like crazy, knowing that's thousands of people learning about BBSs.
Nice.
That's what it is, you know, and that's where I stand. Now, how long it'll be before, you know, I'm one of the, you know, the problem is the more stature you gain, the more people want to tear you down. That's all part of the fun.
I don't think that could happen because, you know, the way that you have, like, textiles.com, I mean, so many people, I mean, you don't really, you know, like, downgrade anybody. You know,
well, it's
pretty much an open forum for anybody who lists their textiles, just about.
It does happen, but it's not, you know, what do you call it? It's one of those classic problems. If 100 people compliment you and one disses you, all you can think about is that one diss.
Yeah.
And you have to get out and, just the nature of this subculture is it's extremely, there's an extreme sense of competition and therefore negativity because you know, sometimes the only way you can win is by trying to kill all the other contestants.
Oh.
That's just one of those things, right? You know, oh, we're the biggest blah on the net and fuck the other guys and we'll pack at them. And now I don't generally get hacked because actually I used to get hacked a lot. I used to not really protect my box because I figured what the hell. I always took a scorched earth approach to security, which was, you know, back my stuff up all the time, and if someone deletes everything off my box, put it back on again.
Yeah.
And I used to do that for years. And then there was this funny situation that happened in 2000. It's summer. Was that late 2000? Yeah, it was late 2000. And somebody, I forgot the kid's name already, he contacts me, right? And he says, attention, I'm with this. It was literally a name like Cyber Vigilante Force. It was a really dumb name. It was like something you'd get out of a Chuck Norris movie. And he said, we have determined that you have anarchy files on your server, and we say you are not allowed to do that. That is bad. You have 15 days to remove them. So I put up on the front page of techfiles.com, hey, everybody, he wants me to shut down. Here's his email address.
Oh, no.
On this website. So I get this mail like six hours later from a different account saying, please stop. what happened was like first they took his server down, then they started taking down every server he had linked to that he had done work on, and then they'd gone after his ISP and tried to get him shut off, and it was just one of these things of like, oh, you know, he's like, I'm sorry, you know, I'm just trying to like do the whatever, and I just, you know, wrote back like, well, Cyber Vigilante Force. Anyway, so there, I do have supporters on that level, but yeah, right after that, somebody hacked onto my box and deleted a bunch of stuff and basically said, you know, do not post anarchy stuff. And I said, oh, great. Well, if they're going to play that game, I'm going to have to harden the stupid box. And so I actually had to go harden it. But I try to keep things open because, you know, if there's one thing I've learned from watching 25 years of piracy is the stupider you get with it, the more people do it just to spite you.
Right.
And that's a bit, you know, so, you know, I mean, I'm working on this documentary, and I'm working on my DVD. It's going to be a 3-DVD set.
Wow.
And people are like, so what are you going to do about piracy? And I'm going to go, I want to see how nice the NFO file is. But beyond that, I mean, there is a certain segment of people who would be personally offended if they couldn't pirate my stuff. They wouldn't, you know, I mean, and no amount of copy protection, assholery, legal threatening is going to make them stop.
Right.
What that does instead is there's a group of people who would want to pirate it but might not want to download 3-DVD. Then there's a group of people for whom they just don't know anybody and they don't know how to download and run dial-up and they're fine. They'll buy it. And then there's a group of people who will never buy it because they don't give a shit about the subject. And trying to force those outside spectrum into the thing is where you lose the most. You lose the most money trying to make people who don't want it, want it. And you lose the most money trying to make people who will never buy it, legally, buy it. It just, it won't work.
Can you elaborate more on what all's going to be on archive.org? I heard you were going to put the raw of interviews on there.
Yeah, how'd you hear that? Did I say that somewhere?
I think you might have mentioned it on Radio Freak America.
Oh, Radio Freak, the Radio Freak. Oh, you mean the Jason shows, you know, guest starring Radio Freak America. Boy, I didn't shut up on that one. I didn't shut up now. This is the problem. You talk to a guy like me. I'm a type A personality. I'm used to doing everything myself. You know, I go, hey, like over the weekend, I added 16,000 music files to artteam.textfiles.com because that's what I do. You know, that's what I do. Anyway, so, yes, the plan was always to do the documentary, quote-unquote, right, and to not make the mistakes that I see in other documentaries. Now, I'm going to make some anyway because it turns out that that's kind of the nature of documentaries, so hooray. But one of them is, like, the example I used to give to people was I saw a documentary on New York, and in that documentary, they had Donald Trump. But Donald Trump says one thing in it. Donald Trump says basically, New York, you know, we make skyscrapers first, we make them the best. That's it. And I'm thinking, they must have interviewed the Donald for at least 20 minutes, maybe an hour.
And that's all they could get out of him.
And I'll bet he got some really good statements in there that just didn't fit in that context. And nobody's ever going to see them because blah, 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 production doesn't want you fucking with their stuff.
Right.
That is lame. So about a year or something, or after sales start to die down on the DVD stuff, my intention is to release, with a few exceptions, pretty much all the footage I shot, all 250 hours, on archive.org. Because I interviewed Ward Christensen for 5 hours. This is the man who invented X-Modem. This is the guy who kind of co-creates the BBS as we know it.
Nice.
Well, you know, he's a... Hmm?
No, go on.
Oh, okay, sorry, I thought I heard somebody... you know, I am Ward Christensen's only video interview. He never sat down for a video interview before because he's kind of a shy guy. So, am I going to sit there with the 5 hours I have and show you, you know, 15 minutes of it and then hide the part where he talks about, like, creating diode switches to keep memory on so he didn't have to flip the switches in the front of his Altair anymore and... Just neat stuff this guy's talking about. Some amazing things. Not all of it related to BBS, since he's a talker like me. Well, now you'll be able to go there and you'll be able to download and listen to the interview.
Right.
And that's important to me. And so all these, some of these people who I think are heroes, people who, I mean, you know, one of the things that's funny about this documentary is it's such a huge subject. I have so many subgroups. There's people who, there's some interviews that I have merely because I know people who go, holy shit, it's that guy. The most obvious one being, for instance, Wayne Bell, who created World War IV, or The Mentor, who did Conscience of a Hacker, or Vinton Cerf, co-creates TCPIP. You know, these guys are in there talking about stuff, and I'm going to have these full interviews up. Like Vinton Cerf and I talked for an hour. I got an hour of his time with a 3-month advance warning, scheduled ahead of time. Secretary sent me a 5-page, so you're going to have an interview with Vinton Cerf guide. And I went in there for an hour, and we talked for about, BBS is about 5 minutes out of the hour. And the rest of the time, I am sitting in a room alone with one of the most brilliant men still involved in technology and getting to ask him anything I want.
Right.
And so he talked about the nature of copyright. He talked about some of the issues dealing with space internet. He talked about, because that's what he's working on now. He's working on a protocol for space internet, so you can telnet to satellites and stuff.
Right.
And
satellite protocol.
So there's all these problems with that because the stuff is constantly moving.
Yeah.
And so he's doing all this stuff. It's a beautiful thing. And so anyway, so I'm going to make sure that gets up on the web. And I've already talked to the archive.org people. They're all for it. We're doing a pilot project this year that I've been working on the side, but it's taking a little bit of time. Somebody gave me, this will have, how many of the five of you know what FidoNet is?
Nothing actual.
I don't know what FidoNet is.
Okay.
I've heard of it before. I'm not exactly familiar with it.
FIDO was a VBS program created in 1984 by a gentleman named Tom Jennings, who, among other things, was one of the guys who worked at Phoenix and helped make the Phoenix BIOS. This guy had a program called FIDO. It was a simple VBS by most standards. However, he had people, he was living in California, he knew some people in Maryland, and he said, I ought to have it so that when you post on one, you can see the messages on the other. So he started to work on a protocol called FIDONET that could make FIDOs talk to each other. It started to grow. After a few hundred nodes that were all calling each other at 2 o'clock in the morning and passing messages, he starts to realize this thing is getting out of scale. So they have a big meeting, and they create this massive protocol for FIDONET with regions and people sending things. And over time, FIDONET grows to well over 50,000 nodes, all passing mail between each other.
Okay.
This is in the early 90s. And it still exists today, mostly in other countries. And it's basically networking via phone lines. You just set up a machine, and boom, you're on this network. And this was, to me, the seminal event. This was probably the only time you had, it was completely amateur-created. They made a network. And World War IV and Celerity and a bunch of other boards, they made their own little versions of NET, and almost all BBS programs had a FIDONET interface and wired it in so you could send it. Anyway, at some point, the problem with FIDONET is that it was full of people. When you get something full of people, you end up with politics. So the politics are amazing. And at one point, there's a self-appointed administrative board called the International FIDONET Association that begins to have meetings, intense, nasty meetings, over bulletin board systems.
Oh.
And somebody recorded them. And so I've got 14 hours of these meetings.
Nice.
And I've transferred them all to .waves, and I'm transcribing basic, like, you know, from this minute to this minute, this person says, to something about this subject. You know, not granular word-by-word translations, but just, you know, for this 5 minutes, this guy stood up and spoke. And I've been doing this, and I'm going to give it to archive.org, and then boom, it'll be downloadable forever. And some people are going to be really embarrassed by it, because 15 years ago they weren't so nice. But, on the other hand, on it you can hear them saying, we have to get this online somehow. And, well, here I am 15 years later getting it done.
At least it's done.
Yeah, and I mean, what was it? The most precious thing that I have here, which I have to get back to him soon, Ward Christensen lent me printouts from the first 3 months of the first BBS, and I've been transcribing those.
Nice.
So these are like messages from like 1978.
Jeez, that's the year I was born.
Where people are using things like K00L.
Wow.
So I have this, you know, I mean, one of my favorite stories is how KRAD has been around since 1982.
Forever.
Because of a guy who spoke too fast, used to say okay bye as K bye, and people started sending their messages K bye, making fun of him. And then at one point they were talking about a bulletin board, and they say, yeah, it's K rad. And K rad takes off like crazy because these guys are the most popular pirate boards, and so their vernacular gets spread everywhere because everyone copies it.
Right. And that was the actual origin of K-Rad.
Of K-Rad.
Nice.
And in the meantime, of course, I've gotten to hear 1,000 alternate tales, which is also pretty funny. Like K meaning, you know, K-Rad means 1,000 times rad. Somebody says K-Rad means dark backwards. What was another good one? 1,000 points of rad, K-Rad, and, there was another one, kilobyte rad, and, there was another one that was just beautiful like that. Oh, Juarez was the other one. because Juarez is a corruption of Wares, which is a corruption of Wares with an S, which is a corruption of softwares, and
right.
so on. Well, somebody explained to me, in all earnestness, that Juarez was actually a Spanish pirate who lived in the 1800s, and was so good at his craft that software pirates today honor his name.
That's right.
Calling it Juarez. It was the greatest thing in the world. I love those stories. It's like kids say the darndest thing, but for pirating. Anyway, sorry. I love talking. I love getting the word out, you know?
That's fine.
You'll find that most people at the face of a project are kind of fanatics, and I'm kind of a fanatic.
No.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
You said you're doing a 3-DVD set. Do you have a publisher lined up already?
I'm it.
Okay. And would it be possible to include a copy of your textile collection as maybe a fourth disc?
No, because of copyright concerns.
Ouch.
One of the things also that used to, that also kind of, one of the other reasons I don't do advertising, which is a vague, minor, different reason, but more importantly, a reason I don't sell DVDs for people to download, buy copies, is because all it takes is one guy going, I wrote this for U.S., I've had this happen, I had this one guy, Bruce Goldfarb. He wrote an article for USA Today. Somebody transcribed it and put it up on a BBS, and I got a copy of it and had it up forever. And he found it, and he was like, how dare you? You must give me a list of everyone who has downloaded this.
Yeah.
And can contact them and make them delete it. And I wrote back, please have sex with your hat.
Yeah. Like, logs like that are even possible.
Well, that's the thing. But the point is a guy like that, if it had turned around and it turned out I was selling them.
Ouch, yeah.
Now we're in head trouble. That's basically, so my take on it is torrent it for free, get it out there, and even though they've changed the piracy laws to make it so even if you don't gain monetary value from it, you're still a pirate, I still, at least it's a level of moral defense on my side. I'm not making money off these guys.
That makes a lot of sense.
So that's basically what that is. As for the publisher thing, I'm kind of doing a lot of this stuff in a way that probably doesn't, like, people say to me, so you're going to go on Nova, right? You're going to be on PBS or Tech TV. And the answer is, it's not that important to me. I went to school for film, and I then immediately went into computers because people think watching TV or movies, they understand how brutal and unpleasant the media business is, but that's the rosy picture they paint for themselves.
Yeah.
The at the end of the day, though, the right will happen. I'm like, no. It is the worst thing ever. They will tunnel through their own grandmothers to get a penny from you. It is the most unpleasant experience whatsoever. I would never recommend dealing with them. It's why it's that love-hate relationship hackers have with the media. They like that the word gets out, but then they realize it's the wrong word, and it's brought to them by COVID.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of those things. I don't trust them. So, for me, it's look at Tech TV, which people would think. It's the Nerds Network. Two problems with it. First of all, it's owned by Ziff Davis, one of the most cocksucking companies in the world. Now they've just sold it over with G4, which is basically Comcast, which is refined the procedure of cocksucking to be even, you know, more efficient for them.
More high speed.
Now it costs you money to have them force you to suck their cock. So now it's going to be, you know, whatever. Anyway, you take that company, which sucks, and then you look at what they've done with these. They have a series of interesting documentaries, one on Steve Mann, one on Klingons, Steve Mann, Klingons, Roswell, and so on. What do? They re-edit them, and they put them out as Nerd Nation. And it looks like some sort of TV series, which includes these people. But in fact, no, it's just a bunch of rebranded documentaries edited down to be not quite so authentic.
Oh.
So, you know, maybe they're going to pay you $5 or $10,000. But people are going to see this little tiny sliver of what you wanted it to be, and you are going to get some bad surprises. And you're going to find out that they have a lock on showing it for like a year. And they will show it so much that nobody will even want to buy your original one. So, you know, it's not a pleasant experience. I've had films play at Sundance. I have been on the Comedy Central channel with stuff. You know, it wasn't a moneymaker. It was certainly whatever. I mean, I got a film on Comedy Central back in 1990. It had to be 1993, of course, because it was a Schoolhouse Rock animation style about the Kennedy assassination. And they took it, and they played it the weekend of the shooting, which was the 30th anniversary. Great way to... Anyway, so they paid us, my team, $1,200, and they played it, by our estimation, like something around 100 times that year.
Jeez.
So for 100 by 3, so 300 minutes of video for $1,200, I mean, wow, boy, we sure made out.
Yeah. I have a question about the documentary, if you don't mind.
Oh, sure.
I was wondering if it covers any packet switch networks or anything like that.
The documentary itself is not in a final, or not even in a vaguely edited form, so I'm always hesitant to say it's got this, it doesn't have this.
Right.
But I can say that there is what I call first strata and second strata topics. The biggest problem, the reason that there hasn't really been a BDS documentary is because there hasn't been enough fucking and killing, because that's basically what they're interested in.
Right.
They want, and that's what they want in a product. That's what documentaries interest people, fucking and killing. So hackers are interesting because they might hit something wrong and kill you. And, you know, the story of this Hollywood star is interesting because they had sex with somebody. And with BDSs, it's not obvious on the face. Where's the fucking, where's the killing? Now, there has been fucking and killing associated with BDSs, but, you know, I mean, it's not anywhere they want to do it. And there's a lot of concepts in BDSs that are very hard to get on the screen. Like, I'm going to show people how slow it could be and what it was like to do this and what pirating was like. And packet switching, specifically, as I think of it, PC pursuit.
Right.
That's what I call a second strata subject. In other words, I'm not sure if I can portray it on there in a way that makes sense, but I will ensure that the supplement materials, which are on bbsdocumentary.com, will certainly cover that. And so that there'll be something where you know, somebody will know the story and go, oh, there was a thing called PC Pursuit, and it was like this.
Right. The thing I was concerned about was through my many searches through Google and other engines, I couldn't find really a thing about how the packet switch network was networked, basically, how it all worked and came together.
Right. That's one of those, one of those things that I'm finding now is I kind of put up like a jerky kind of research page of like, I'm working on these concepts. You know, what happened here? What happened here? And I found places were linking to me because nobody else was discussing it. Like the Zip Arc War, which is one of the most seminal events in BBS history, is like in such disarray, and I've been piecing it together. I'm having trouble, believe it or not, thinking of an analogous thing that happened on the internet. Maybe Napster, in terms of like how it touched everything and changed the nature of everything. Zip versus Arc was a battle over compression schemes that occurred in 1985. What happened was that somebody made an Arc format, and he was a commercial product to Arc it up. The other people had Arcing, but you know, he had an Arc product, and he sold like professional versions but gave away certain versions.
Right.
Somebody takes the source code, which is available. He made the source code available as an evaluative tool, which one can consider naive or whatever, but it was part of their deal. It's like, and here's the source code, so you can look at how we did this and whatever. Somebody took it. His name was Philip Katz, and he took it and rewrote it, part of it in assembler, part of it not, and started selling it as his own, PK Arc. Well, eventually he's advertising in magazines next to the Arc thing saying, we're better than that. They're using their own code. So they sued him. This was the biggest mistake. People were like, you're suing him? How dare you? And then their idiot lawyer, because they do take some fault for this, their idiot lawyer said, and you're using the Arc format, the Arc extension, which is ours. And people went, you can't own an extension, you motherfucker. This battle raged, and it basically destroyed the company. And it was always painted that Phil Katz was one guy up against a big company called System Enhancement Associates. Turns out System Enhancement Associates was four people. Philip Katz was five people. Anyway, so this went on for some time, and basically ARC gets decimated. Philip Katz goes off and creates the zip format to get away from the whole battle, and that becomes ubiquitous. Eventually, Seagog goes out of business. He moves back home to his place, and I went and interviewed him about it. Now, Phil Katz had other problems and dies of alcohol poisoning in 2000 after a whole series of things. The guy who was the other one who moved away, the ARC guy, basically put out a statement saying, you know, he drank himself to death out of guilt from stealing our stuff. and I thought that was kind of something. But when I went to interview him, he's the only case I have of interviewing somebody who cries on camera.
I heard about that.
When he talks about how much it decimated his life.
Yeah.
That his one joy in life was going to his mailbox and getting the fan mail from people and saying, thanks for writing ARC, we use it this way, that's wonderful. And then one day these people are writing these personal, scathing, angry, how dare you, you vicious, evil man, and all these personal threats and everything else, and it broke him. I mean, he just started crying, talking about it. So that was like, this is this astounding soap opera that was just going to disappear. You know, nobody would know about it.
Now,
certainly not the younger, quote-unquote, generation. I should talk, I'm 34. But, you know, it's something that would just disappear. And it's important. So that's part of why I'm doing this. It's a very weird, abstract subject, but it needs to be in there. And that's, like, one of the big seminal events. Stuff like PC Pursuit, there's something called ArborNet, there's something called Plato. There's a bunch of concepts that are there. And the challenge to me is which ones will fit. I mean, the documentary is not just one documentary, I don't know if that's clear. That's why it's three DVDs. It's like seven episodes, each focusing on a subject. So there's going to be one on, like, piracy and hacking, and there's going to be one on Fidonet, one on the anti-art scene. I've been doing a lot of work with them, and so on. So there's these stories with focuses that go through, and hopefully it'll be entertaining. I certainly don't lack entertaining footage. I mean, I've got hours and hours of some of the funniest crap I've ever seen. Weird crap, too. But, that's what you call it. An extremely long-winded explanation. any other questions, or has everyone figured out that asking a simple question gets them 15 minutes of rant yet?
No, it's very interesting.
No, this was fine.
I was wondering what you think about the current scene with text files and web e-zines and things of that nature.
Well, okay, what are you saying?
What's your opinion of the current state of affairs with text files and on your web.textfiles?
So you're saying specifically web. So you're saying what, you mean the text file scene?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Are you the dig guy?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wondering. Okay. You know, one of the things that people always forget about scenes and events is that, again, they're composed of real people.
Mm-hmm.
The way I always give an example is piracy. Is people think of the romantic times of the pirates on the high seas, not realizing that most of those people didn't have teeth. They fell out, and they weren't very pleasant people. And, buggery and sodomy ruled the day, and violence for no good reason ruled the day, and the concept of piracy is much more interesting than the actual experience of piracy. Well, with scenes, even BBS scenes and stuff, there's a lot of the grunge and sweat and reality of human interaction in them. And I mostly deal in abstract. I usually go along the end and scoop up the remains. I pick up the old tickets and the posters, and I don't go to the concert. I just bring the recordings and the memorabilia. Well, what happened, the only reason that they're even into web text files was accomplished because I was starting to get all these files that were like, you know, how to change your screen name on AOL, or how to get your instant messenger client to get rid of a banner ad. And I was like, I don't want these things next to the other stuff. And it was really confusing trying to pick it apart. So I declare an arbitrary date, 1995, January 1st, which is when things really start to go to shit. And AOL starts to, like, you know, pound people on the internet, and Netscape and Microsoft are trying to shove as many people on the internet as possible.
So Pablo has never ended.
I go, that's it. This is when it began.
Can I interrupt just for 1 second?
Sure.
Are you on a cell phone by any chance?
Yes, I am.
Oh, it's breaking up a little bit.
How about over here? I'm sorry, I stepped over near the computer. But anyway, so So basically, I chose that point. Well, that was going well. Now I started to get lots of other interesting files, files about Nintendo, files about stuff. I started to see these e-zines coming out, you know, all these different little e-zines that were there. And I was downloading them and everything else. And then I got this stupid idea in my head. But I was like, we have to keep track of the newest of the new, the cutting edge of the scene. And that's where scene.xfiles.com came.
Okay.
And this is when I started to run into a problem, which is I don't get along well with people. And I don't, like, people are flawed. I mean, the people who do these things, do these scenes, right, are doing it because they need to express themselves that way. And because they have that need, it sometimes, I don't know, it sometimes replaces other aspects of their personality because it's something strange to express yourself through a text file on a regular basis. It's like it's kind of strange to want to take your guitar and show up in some sweaty club every night and do rock or you want a mountain bike every waking hour, you want to jog. You know, you give a certain amount of yourself to that, and it becomes very meaningful to you, and your battles and the natural sense of being human expresses itself that way. And then when that happens, now you're dealing with personalities, not with events, and you're kind of making the news while reporting the news, and inevitably, I start to get into these battles. And almost every person I've dealt with then, I've run into the personality conflicts. You know, I am doing this, not so much as a job, but as a very intense hobby, like Civil War reconstruction level intense hobby. So let's say somebody's running a zine. A good example is Mogul, you might know of. He of Hogs of Entropy and like 1,000 other zines. He and I don't talk anymore. You know, we end up falling out. And for a while, scene.textfiles.com, then, instead of having Mogul, it was run by a guy named the BMC and somebody else who I forget, we had a falling out. And then there was another person I was doing stuff with who we had a falling out. And so after a while, I realized that what I really got to do, and oh, by the way, I should plug them, of course. They have gone off and started their own rival website called textscene.com. Feel free to visit. It's much better maintained than mine in terms of keeping track of the newest of the new, because all they keep track of is zines. I keep track of the zines, and I link to a local copy of it, because I always make a local copy. They don't. So if, you know, your homewebserver.isp.com/tildezenograph/thing/zine.2.txt goes away, they don't have it anymore.
Right.
But I keep my copy. That's something. But anyway, the point is just that I don't like them, but that's because they're here and they're human, and I'm an archivist. History collectors and history makers don't usually see eye to eye. The history maker wins out in the end, but it's kind of an empty victory. You know, at the end, yeah, maybe I'm going to be the only record of these people because I'm collecting it and they're not making an effort to centralize it and so on. But on the other hand, like I said, it's a victory that comes, you know, I try to explain to people that I'm thinking, you know, they're like, my senior's up, I don't need to deal with you. And I'm like, yeah, but what are you going to do in 25 years? But that's not a functional, when you're 19, you don't think in terms of 25 years. You don't know what 25 years is.
But just think about here and now.
You haven't seen it, and that's fine. That's perfectly your, you know, what am I going to do? You shouldn't be spending all your time living for the future or in the past. I mean, it's not healthy.
Right.
So I don't mind it, but it does lead to these personality clashes. I just had a recent one with a group called Depth Core, which was hysterical, where I said, hey, can I get a copy of your site? And they were like, fuck you. Get the fuck away from us, you lamer. What's this shit about history? Who gives a shit? And I'm like, okay, backing off, loving you. And that's just natural. So, you know, like I try to collect Dig Zine. I do collect Dig when I can.
Yeah.
But I'm also collecting, you know, that's the problem, right? You'll come out with Dig 3, and you'll come out with Dig 4, and Dig 5, and Dig 6, and then I'll come around Dig 7 and go, oh, 7, 6, 5, 4.
Right.
Because I'm like Aslan from the Narnia Chronicles. I'm kind of in many lands, and I'm only in some, you know, one day I'm doing nothing but art scene. One day I'm doing nothing but, you know, this historical research. One day I'm doing nothing but this, and I'm only one guy. And I have found that I can't delegate for shit. I can't say, you, protege, you do this part. It doesn't work. I come back 5 seconds later. Hey, Protege, are you finished yet? Protege is like, I have a thing called a life, you lameless snoozer. So that's, you know, that's one of the downsides is, you know, another reason why, like I said, I worry because, you know, sustained contact with me, like a lot of people who are driven, is an unpleasant experience. You know, so that's why I try to keep contact, you know, like this. We'll talk for an hour, you know, or whatever, and you're, you know, have a good time. But I guarantee you, three nights in a row of me, and you're done. You have seen that movie. You don't need the special edition. You don't need the director's trip cut. You are set. Jason Scott, great guy. Met him. Can't stop talking. Good guy. No, I don't want to see him. Yeah, exactly.
I noticed when I put out number two, you it sounded like you were surprised. Like, oh, wow, number two is out.
Well, that's a whole, what do you call it? Okay, first of all, if you're talking about, like, I'm seeing the pixel.com or something like that, there's a lot of one-shots in this world. And, of course, keep this in mind. My experience, which may or may not be of use to people, is that any project, and by any project, I mean any project, a zine, a program, a group, a website, anything, lasts about 6 months. And the way it usually lasts is you have the first thing. And what a great thing that is. You made the first thing of this. You know, we're going to do, with the sky's the limit, there's going to be a big ranch, we're going to have a big commune, everything's going to be great.
Uh-huh.
Second one comes in. Hey, everybody, it's us again. Things are good. Things are going well. We've really improved. Third one comes in. It's a little smaller than the others. Okay, everybody. Yeah, I got a couple things for you. Don't worry. Next month will be better. Fourth month doesn't show up. Fourth is gone. Nothing there. Fifth month shows up. Number four shows up. Says, hey, everybody, sorry for the delay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, college and shit, and my girlfriend was mad at me, so I had to go to take her to the movies, and so it was working. Yeah. And then, like, fifth is like, hey, everybody, here's a copy of this file. Bye. And then
I've seen that before.
And that's the break point, right? Then it's going to be either, what the fuck am I thinking? We're going to rule. And then you'll get ones like, hey, everybody, it's a new year. And, you know, and sometimes people go, you know, I remember the good times I had making those five issues. So here's issue number six, you know, and so on. And it's a tough thing to maintain. That's why I was so complimentary on Dual Parallel for creating 99 episodes of RFA. That is a stunning achievement for a 20-year-old, the early 20s, you know. I mean, To sit down and say, let's make a show, and then do it again, and do it again, and do it again, 99 times.
That's right.
That's astounding, you know, and not, like, change the format halfway through. That was lame music, you know.
But that was ever late, was consistent.
Right.
Right. That consistency, that's what keeps people coming back. Woody Allen, who, of course, everyone should go to for moral advice, said, you know, 95% of success is just showing up. You know, people say, hey, we're going to do this project. Could you kind of be here on Tuesday night? And if you show up, definitely 95% of the battle, because most people aren't going to show up.
Right.
They're going to blow it off. They're going to come up with an excuse. They're not going to make it. They're going to go, this is lame. And then four times later, now you're in charge. You're doing stuff. You're making a difference because you were the guy who was always there. And that's what he did. And then people go, wow, RFA rocks, you know, really rocks. I could do that show. And they put up a show, and it lasts anywhere between 3 and 15 shows and dies. But along the way, you know, their 15 shows, yeah, maybe they didn't stick around, but they're interesting. They're a different take on it. It's kind of fun. And so just Duel is not only, and of course they want Duel on, right? They want Duel to come talk on their show, and they want to talk on Duel's show, and you end up with an actual culture that rises up because one guy is being consistent. You know, people rip on Emmanuel, but Emmanuel has been kind of running 2600 for 20 years now.
Yeah. Man, that's one thing I do like, not to cut you off, but that's one thing I do like about Emmanuel is that he did give an open forum to people, you know, consistently, and he never derived from that. You know, I mean, you know, outside of his skills or what it may that be, you know, but that's one thing that he has never stopped, but he's always given anybody a voice, you know.
You know, that's the thing. And I mean, you know, people trash him and whatever, and then I don't care about that. I went to a meeting with him in 84 at the CityCorp Center when they first started having them. Like, they were talking about this whole 2600 magazine idea. And
right.
I was like, wow, that sounds cool. I was there, you know, in the beginning, big deal. But the thing is that, you know, he went ahead and then did it for months and months and months and months. He's been doing it. People go, well, it sucks. And I'm like, well, you know, that's what happens, you know. You have a bar that everyone meets at every week. Well, sometimes the bar sucks. Sometimes the music sucks. Sometimes jocks go in there and make it rotten for you. But it's there. And you build from that. And you go, you know, let's meet it there, and then we're going to go out and get a movie. Well,
yeah.
You know, it's causing it. And that's what I'm big on. I'm big on just consistency. And so with textfiles.com, I try to collect everything that I can because I think it's interesting. And with audio at textfiles.com, I've kind of set myself up because I am kind of having to scan. Because people don't tend to tell me. Like, they don't connect to it and go, hey, my new show is up.
Right.
I guess I don't have a mechanism for that. I should put something on there and just go, hey, you know, Jason, new show. It'd be really cool if you, you know, kept us in the loop.
Right.
Do you recommend that people just random people email you if they see you're not up to date, America?
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah. Nothing makes me happier than, Jason, you know, this just happened. Could you please put it on your site? Because I can't do it all.
But that's kind of like your forte, though, is to be there when it starts, you know? I mean, to know the essence of how things start, you know?
Right. But, I mean, that's, you know, that's my, you know, I can only do so much as one person. So, I mean, my eyes aren't everywhere.
Right.
And so I don't really have, I mean, over time, I have scripts and stuff that help me with things, but not, you know, totally.
So have you actually read every file on your site?
One moment. There. Have I read every which?
Do you listen to all the audio shows on your site? Do you read all the files on your site?
Audio, definitely not. I simply have no time. because they're audio, I can't edit my documentary and listen to them at the same time.
Right.
Because they're talking. And I can't read, I mean, I read the beginning of every text file, but I mean, you know, to describe them, with the exception of, like, where somebody gives me, like, 1,000 files in a series, I might just kind of write a script and make 1,000 of them. I've read the vast majority of the files, at least to some level. I mean, some of them, you ought to get combat pay for slowing through.
Mm.
but some of them, you know, it's not a... I see, like, texts of brilliance, and I see other things, you know, I will listen to probably most of the radio shows at some point. When I was doing a trip through the Midwest for the documentary, I put all of the RFAs on a CD and then was listening to it with a CD MP3 player. And so I listened to like 40 of the shows to get a sense of it. But I'm not, you know, as much as I want to, I actually can't enjoy all of them as much as I want to right now. This documentary is so at the forefront of what I'm doing every night, 4 or 5 hours of editing. I mean, there's just no way I can do that and pay attention. So if you can imagine, the rate at which I'm collecting now is me handicapped by having to do all this other work. So once I'm released from that work, look out. You know, I'll be back on full throttle until, of course, Textiles University begins, and then I'll be fucked again, right?
Right.
All right, any other questions?
I suppose the obvious follow-up is, what's Textiles University?
Is that not known? Or I guess it's not known.
For the new callers that may be listening to the show.
For the new callers, Textiles University is the natural extension of where Textiles.com is going. Textiles.com functions as a library. All of them function as a library, giving you minimal but really insufficient context to these files. I don't try to, like, tell stories around them. I kind of just have them. And Textiles University will be a series of lectures and study materials and kind of like a home course thing that teaches you these subjects. And I will go back on some of the contacts of people I've met, some of the old hackers, some of the old computer people, various pundits, and we will set it up as if it's an at-home lecture series. So you can listen to a lecture that I give on some subject, which includes guest lectures from some of these stars, and cites from things and says, okay, and so here's the reading material, here's 15 text files you should read. And people can go at their own pace and learn these subjects, like Phone Freaking 101 or BBSs or the state of early internet or something like that. So it's the natural extension to turn around and say, okay, you know, people always want, it's one of those like pipe dreams that you always hear from people. They're like, we ought to have a class. And we ought to have it. You can teach the newbies and stuff. And I'm like, well, what you need is an insane type A personality to do it. Well, here you go.
Excellent.
So that's my plan.
Well, that sounds like you're going to have your hands full there.
Have you seen any other attempts at documentaries of this sort or any books that caught your eye about bulletin boards or...
Not about bulletin boards per se, which is why I'm doing it. But there have been, I do take an interest in obscure, whack-ass documentaries about subjects not easily translated to film. Because obviously I'm making one.
Yeah.
So for instance, I think of a documentary called Avatars Offline, which is about multiplayer role-playing games. Or Scratch, which is about DJs. And scratching.
I brought that up was I just finished reading a book. It's actually available online. It's called Underground.
Yeah.
Underground hyphen book. Have you read it?
Yes.
What was your?
I know the author. How about that?
Oh, right.
But yeah, I mean, people find me. How about that? It's great when somebody sent me a book in Swedish. I still have it. By Jan Svensson, S-H-A, Hakugrupen som skadade Sverige, and I'm like, great, I can't read Swedish. But it's got a nice autograph in the front. To Jason, thanks, all the best. That's the only part I can read. Anyway, so it's a really well-written, fun thing, but it's basically about Australia, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I like it, and I'm glad that somebody's talking about the hacking scene in Australia, which is pretty massive and pretty interesting. Australians have a different take on technology than Americans do, just a little bit.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no, I love that thing. I love that it's available. I love they, you know, put it up in all these different formats. I have a copy of it, certainly, on my site. I'm all for that. I know of that book. There are books out there. Invisible Rendezvous is a book about that. I always recommend to people, probably the best book that I've ever read is Hackers by Stephen Levy and Hacker Crackdown by Bruce, look at me, Sterling. And, those are really solid, good books. And I couldn't write a better book on those subjects the way they've written them. Those are there. I also recommend getting a free copy of Memoirs of a High-Tech Hustler, although you'll have to steal it, I think, to get it for free. But it's this horribly written book, but it's great to read for that very same reason. It's really like, you know, I used to move satellites kind of liar thing. Anyway, in terms of documentaries, like I said, Devil's Playground, which is about Amish kids, Mind Candy. I did a lot of promotion for Mind Candy, which is the demo DVD. With all the stuff about the demo scene, which is a very hard thing to get across. Those kind of things. I love those obscure documentaries. I'm always trying to link, if you go to bbsdocumentary.com, I may have removed it. I don't think so. It's one of the, you know, are there other documentaries out there? And I've found, like, various hacker documentaries out there. And there's some kid in London, I shouldn't call him a kid, he's 25, but he made this, he made a documentary about this gaming team. You know, the four kings from London who go and fight in Quake tournaments and actually they go in, what is it called? The really good one. The one that everyone, Counter-Strike. Counter-Strike tournaments. And it's really fascinating how hard he's worked to make these great compelling documentaries about fighting in Counter Strike, and he gives those away for free. And his last one was like funded by Intel, so he got the good camera.
Right. He got the good camera.
I have the pretty good camera. I've got like the $4,000 camera, but he had like the $20,000 camera.
Right.
That thing blows you while you shoot people. Aim it at a blank wall and it would look like the Sistine Chapel on the screen. Yeah, that's a great camera. Never underestimate the importance of good sound and good viewing.
Right.
I thought I was actually looking at a $2,000 camera.
Well, I mean, it depends on what you're doing, right? I mean, it depends on what you're up for and what you're doing. I got the Canon XL1, which is a very good camera. It looks nice. It's probably the better-looking camera under $10,000, or at least it used to be when I bought it in 2001. And I'm happy to own it, and I've done a lot of shooting with it, and I think the stuff looks pretty good. The trailers look pretty good on it, I hope. You know, but there's things that are wrong with it, and there are things that are I could have done better, and if I was going to do it again, you know, I don't talk about it much, but if I was ever to do another documentary, it would be about text adventure. But I have kind of a deal with the family that I am not to do another one with my own money. So if I do one, it'll have to be outside funded, because I ain't putting more money into this. I've already spent $25,000 I didn't want to have to spend. So, not that that's a lot of money. I mean, $25,000 for what's going to end up being 7 hours of footage is a damn bargain.
Yeah,
but you know, but still, it's the principle of the thing. You know, I'd rather not spend the money that way.
Do you think that once you get done with your documentary, that you'll actually shop it around?
You know
what I mean, like to different networks.
Like I said previously, I don't like the network.
Right.
Maybe they'll come to me. Maybe they'll say, we want this for this. And unless it's an unbelievable deal, I mean, I'm not being, conceited here.
Right.
I mean, I'm not expecting CBS and Tech TV to send over hookers they have to compete to blow me.
No, but at least that you have, you know, creative control.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. I've created this thing, right? I mean, I've already done the work. I know how it's going to come out, and they're probably not going to want it the way I'm going to produce it. It's going to be not.
I highly doubt any TV station's going to show a 3DVD set on TV.
Oh yeah, but they might show one episode. We branded, cut it down to 45 minutes, put commercials around it. That's what they would say,
right?
And they pay me what? Yeah, you know, they pay me $30,000-$40,000 for the rights for some sustained period of time, 2-3 months, and then run it. Or unlimited rights for $100,000 or something like that.
Right.
That's what they would do. I'm not, you know, I'd rather just get it done, get it right, 3 DVDs, sell it to libraries, sell it to people who want it, and know that at least somewhere there's a base project that tells the story. That other people can go, he got it totally wrong, which is what they're going to do.
Right.
He got it totally wrong. I'm going to tell the real story, and then it gets told again by different people, and the history is not killed. So that's my plan. Live forever. Download everything.
Would you consider the DVD set, like, the holy grail of what you kind of set out to do, or do you think even beyond that, maybe, like, the Texas University?
Well, what do you mean? You mean which?
Like the best thing, like kind of what you set out to accomplish with Tech Files and all that. Like, you made the site. Now you're making a huge documentary about it. Do you think that's like?
I can tell you that. I mean, I can certainly tell you that when I first started collecting the files in '98, I had no idea either this was going to happen. I can tell you that definitely. But as for the two of them. Tech Files University is the logical end of what I'm doing. BBS Documentary is a side project that has gotten way out of control. However, it will give me experience that this other end-level project will be better, because now I'll have interview skills. Because believe it or not, in an interview situation, I can shut the fuck up and let the subject speak. But when I'm trying to describe the stuff, of course, you can't shut me up. But you know, that's basically what's going to happen. I can take pieces of the BBS documentary and re-put them into Tech Files University. I can't do it the other way around. So in that way, it's kind of like, you know, I mean, the logical end of this is Textiles University, and that's obviously where it's going to go. Textiles University may become a nonprofit organization.
There you go.
I may take it the all the way, just like the Wikimedia people. They now have Wikimedia. And you can go there, and there's all these people, you know, all these websites and everything else, and it's run by a nonprofit. LiveJournal is the same way, run by a nonprofit. I think DeviantArt is heading that way. It's a logical thing. And then they, you know, I mean, the problem is like, again, I really don't want to tarnish the things with money. And by tarnish, I don't mean like, you know, hippie, trippy, dippy shit. I just mean, I just don't want Coca-Cola providing it. You know, branded education is one of the secret shames of our country.
Yeah.
Where they let untold influence change stuff. I love just letting people, I love the fact, you know, people put flash interfaces onto their stuff. People put weird CGIs. You know, people are like, why don't you put this in and put this in? And I'm like, because my purpose is to be the big dump. And somebody comes along, takes textfiles.com, and they make a search application for it. Or they go ahead and make a flash interface to it. I don't care. That's their fun. That's their wanky little thing. I also get a lot of bitchy stuff because I don't even know why I'm stupidly mentioning this anywhere in public, but I'm not a big fan of MySQL. I'm not a big fan of DBs. I'm not a big fan of working so hard to get all this stuff to something where everyone can read it, and then putting it into another format. It just happens to be the way I think. And people go, but MySQL, it'll be around forever. And I'm like, yeah, that's what the VisiCalc people said. That's what the, you know, that's what Lotus 123 thought. Yeah, let's go get those Lotus 123 cheats out. You know, let's get that Maxdor 65 billion-2X tape that was out for 3 weeks in 1979 out. My take,
plain text isn't going to go away.
Plain text isn't going to go away, and if somebody wants to someone wants to DB it and turn it into a database and put it out, great. It's right there. Go ahead and do it. So, for me, I love just setting people loose in the textfiles.com library, and they just kind of browse through, and they're like, well, I was listening to stuff on ham radio, but oh shit, there's this thing here about, you know, how to build a skateboard ramp. What a cool thing. Look at this, you know. What is this thing? Oh, it's phone freaking. What the fuck is... Oh, look at that. That's what it is. That's really neat. And so on. Just that serendipitous interest. And that's what I think it promotes. And, yeah, it's a little tough to get around, but, you know, it's all there. That's what's important. And from that, anything can happen. I have a huge rant where I talk about don't go for perfect, don't go for all. Like, don't sit there not putting your stuff up because every bit has to be in perfect shape. And don't act like it's not ready unless you have... I'm like, put it up half-ass. Because half-ass is better than no-ass. Because otherwise people are going to, you know... Like, for instance, if you took this show, right? And you said, but I don't want any of the mistakes we made. You know, I don't want to make it where there was any problems. Let's delete this part. And, oh, I got to... I'm supposed to be spending 5 days after each show tweaking it.
Yeah.
Throw the fucker up. In another 20 years, someone will have an AI that will make us all sound like geniuses.
Yeah.
And it will translate everything we say to Japanese so the Japanese can hear it. Great, we're all set. You know?
That's what
it is. Throw it up and life will deal with it. You know, that's...
Oh, sorry to interrupt. I had a question again, if you didn't mind. On your site, you say you know that you don't have every file out there. I mean, obviously that's safe to assume, but are there particular files that you recall that you cannot find?
There's only one that I couldn't find that was finally sent to me.
Wow.
And it was called Fall of the Modem World by, I'm forgetting his name now. Anyway, at some point in like 1991, somebody created a file called Fall of the Modem World where they bemoaned how much things had gone downhill in BBSs and all the good parts of BBSs were now gone. And it was a seminal file. Everyone knew about it, but nobody had it. And I actually got into a weird little political thing with it. Like I said, I do have enemies who don't think I do a good thing. And some of them were dangling it in front of me. You know, like, I have a copy, but I won't let you have it. Like, whatever, okay. I'm like, well, okay. Eventually somebody sent it to me. And I was like, okay, that's up. End of story, next. I don't really have anything like that. I don't have any... I believe that every seminal file, every file that probably traveled with any amount of distance, is probably on my site. Just over time, that's what happened. Now, there are a lot of files, obviously, that were localized or to a very small set that I wouldn't have and will never have because those machines have died or those files are gone. People send me their old Apple II discs and their old Commodore discs and everything, and I take stuff off them for them. So I sometimes get old, like, BBS logs for one BBS that existed for, like, 12 minutes in 1989. You know, that'll be fine. But, no, it's actually kind of funny. No, I really, for the 1995, pre-1995 stuff, I mean, no. No, we're pretty set. You're generally going to find it there. If it's not there, then it probably didn't get out very far, and Somebody should have stayed up another couple of hours and uploaded it to a few more BBSs.
There you go, that's why.
Yep.
It's all their fault.
Do you still connect to any BBSs?
I run a BBS or two. Works.org. It's the SSH to it. I think it's either waffle at works.org or BBS at works.org. There's a BBS there. The Works, which was my BBS, started in 1986.
Oh, was it the Cult of the Dead Cow?
It was Cult of the Dead Cow, but that was after I stopped being the primary sysop, yeah. That's the Works.
Is that phone, do you have a phone number for that still, or is that?
No, it's totally on the line. So it's works.org, which is pretty memorable, I might add.
Is that really Chris, ask one more thing. Sorry to keep interrupting, but I was curious if cow.techfiles.com came from the Cult of the Dead Cow.
You mean cow.net, my other site?
Yeah.
No. I really like cows. When I was in high school, my friends and I had a band. We used to call ourselves JS Squared because all of our initials started with JS, and we thought, well, that's a stupid name. And then we said, well, in our band, we will have positions. And let's make really stupid positions. So it was like rodent manifestation supervisor or something. You know, we're just making up stuff when we were 16. And one of them was bovine ignition system. And we thought that was the funniest fucking name in the world. So we renamed the band Bovine Ignition System. And we start making music. And we're doing it in four-track, on a four-track tape recorder, so it's there. It's not just... My guitar was over at my buddy's house. We actually recorded things and gave them out. And this stuck with us. I mean, for a couple of years, we kind of made music together here and there, made a song, made something. And people started associating us with cows. You know, bovine ignition systems, they're into cows. So, you know, here comes some cow T-shirt. Well, this gets out of hand. Over time, I've got 300 cow things, just gifts and things. So when time came around to work on my ISP business, which I might add failed in an unbelievably flaming manner, I registered cow.net, figuring on an ISP. Cow. It's available. This is 95. And so now people are like, the cow guy. And so that's basically where that came from. And so I've always kind of had this cow thing going on, which is totally unrelated to everything else. And people just think of me as the cow guy in certain aspects. I used to be a street caricaturist for a few years. I used to draw people's caricatures on the street, and I wear a cow suit because that's what got their attention when I did it. And so I got known as the cow guy of Harvard Square in Massachusetts and so on. So there's like all this history with me and cows. Totally separate from techfiles.com. Now I'm known as the techfiles.com guy, for better or for worse, or what that is, or that really old fuck. But, you know, that's basically where that came from. So no, that's separate but parallel, as we say.
I've got a question.
Sure.
You've been archiving the audio recordings from Def Con, and while they're, on the other hand, they're trying to sell those, have you got any kind of negative feedback from them?
Not yet, but I'm sure I will. Eventually, they're going to get pissed.
What is it? They've had to notice by now.
I mean, that's the classic problem with copyright that lasts 25 years. Oh, maybe they don't want to really not. They don't want to come across.
They're not concerned because of the download rate of, you know, 3K a second.
Well, I mean, there's a rate limiter on audio to textfiles.com. I had to put it in. People were just streaming off it. And that was the end of the T1. And I like the T1. You know, I download quite a bit of stuff for myself, you know.
Right. It must work pretty well for text, but when it comes to hosting, you know, gigs on gigs of audio and...
Yeah, that's basically the problem, is that people were grabbing it. So I set it to, like, a straight 150K. So it's like somebody's retarded cable modem. But like I tell people, the whole point is to archive it and know that, okay, even if all the other mirrors go down, at least there's something out there that I can grab from, and I can put it up.
That's exactly what I do. Anytime I see any kind of like alternative media kind of pop up, you know, vaguely computer related, I grab it. Just keep it, even if I don't listen to it, I just keep it around in case it does disappear.
Right, and that's basically how I do things with these things. So it's depending on the day, you can get a really good download speed, but if things are really going on, you're kind of screwed. There's stuff on there that I'm probably going to continue to get screwed for, but that's all part of life. I try to do what's right. I certainly don't put up recordings that are more than less than a year or two old. So that the sound of knowledge, those morons, can do it. That's basically the story there.
Yep. don't want to be silent too long, and it cuts off the recording.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
That'd be nice to do.
Any other questions?
Yeah, have I killed everybody yet?
No.
You're in the thing.
I'm just waiting for people to say any questions.
I think we questioned them all out.
Wow.
Has never happened before.
You beat them again, Jay.
Do you know how many dial-up BBSs still exist?
In this country, probably less than 150, 200.
Oh, that many?
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, about 150, 200. They're still really big in other countries where the phone lines suck.
Right.
And you can't get good internet.
Yeah. Well, I thought they were pretty much wiped out here.
I went on a U.S. BBS list, and I tried to connect to every single BBS on there, and I think I got about two of them.
Yeah.
There's a few around. You know, they don't, you know, they do their thing. I interviewed a few people who still run them and so on. There's a Fidonet BBS Association that still meets every month. I interviewed them and so on. So
they're in this country?
What?
They're in this country?
Yeah,
wow.
Denton area, Denton, Texas.
That's really close to me.
Wow.
That's where they meet. I was down in Texas twice, actually.
Wow.
I just went through Texas in January. That was my last big shot. I drove... See, one of the things is that I do so many... these interview sets, which are pretty much done, I had to interview everybody in the Midwest. So in 9 days, I drove from Chicago through Minneapolis down to Dallas.
Wow.
And so I was driving 300, 400 miles a day, interviewing somebody and then traveling another 300, 400 miles.
Right.
That's dedication.
That's crazy. That's not normal. And the whole time, I would have gone fucking insane if it wasn't for Radio Freak America.
Oh, man.
Right.
It was like having a really interesting radio show that followed me for 4,000 miles.
Nice.
That's part of the reason why I did this documentary, too, is because I was starting to fall into that problem that people do when they get older. They go, oh, Texas, bunch of fucking gum nuts, fucking dog thing shit, Mexican shit, whatever.
Right.
Because they've never been there, you know? They live up in fucking Connecticut, nobody knows. But I've gone to Texas now. I didn't get shot. I wasn't put in an electric chair. I didn't see one bush. Yeah. I was there and I drove around and I went through and went down to Austin at one point. You know, I mean, I drove a little bit through Texas. I've been there. Same thing as Kansas. I went through Kansas. I went through Oklahoma. I went through Missouri, Chicago, Illinois area, Indiana. You know, I mean, I went through all these places and I've been there. As opposed to, they're real places to me now. They're not just made up names where I speculate what they are.
Right.
That's an important thing to have in your belt, a little bit of experience in the world. And that was really important to me. Plus, I walked into homes of people. I walked into shacks on the edge of town. I walked into high-rise buildings where people had million-dollar apartments. I talked to somebody who made $27 million from BBSs. I talked to somebody who lost millions on BBSs. It's given me a lot of perspective on people, and that's one thing you don't get on IRC.
All right.
IRC. Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of any people that were motivated by something you've done to create something else? Sort of see you as their idol?
Okay. Idol is a really poor word, because if you say that, then if you say you are, right, you're a schmuck. If you don't say it, you're an actor.
Okay, well, maybe I should word like...
Oh, that was inspired by you.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I get a lot of that. I seem to be extremely popular with 15-year-old boys who stumble onto my place, and it's like this insane, uncensored wonderland that gives them everything they want, everything from completely bizarre erotica up to incredible tales of living on the legal edge to inspiring stories of accomplishment and wonder, and how just putting this part next to this part and you can do a magical thing. That appeals to a certain segment. So kids write me and say, oh, you know, what a great site you have. This is wonderful. I never knew this existed. And then I get mail from people who were in it. And they're like, I can't believe somebody remembers this. I can't believe that it's still around. I get one guy, he's like, you have a story I haven't seen in 15 years that I wrote, uploaded to 3 BBSs, and never thought of again.
Wow.
And I found my name on the internet, and it's with you. Somebody
nice.
Remembers what I did. That's wonderful. Other people are like,
nice.
Please take this fucking thing down.
So what's your ratio from fan to hate now?
Do we record it? That's it. To review your message, press 3.
Record. Owned. Sorry.
So
I ruined everything.
I'm still recording. We can keep going. Wait 1 second. Let me make sure that this my little MP3 player still sitting there.
I don't know if it's calling on.
Well, I should be still recording. Let me check. Yes, I'm still recording. We're good.
Okay. I guess the ratio is about 150 fan mails to one hate mail.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Oh, it's excellent. But man, are the hate mails angry?
Right.
They're just angry, but...
Yeah. At least it took.
It's still recording. We're continuing.
All right. Continuation.
Okay.
The laser's dead.
Okay. Well, I mean, is there any other, are there other questions?
I'd just like to say the fact that, you know, that you actually took the initiative, you know, to preserve everything, you know, for, almost 25 years. You know, I mean, you have some things up on your website that are just as old as I am.
Oh, I've got stuff that's older than you. I can guarantee you that.
I just can't imagine the feeling that you get, you know, when you got that email from, you know, from that guy saying that, you know, I posted this 15 years ago, you know, and I'm out searching on the net and it's with you, you know. I mean, I can't even imagine what that feeling's like.
Well, that's part of what drives me.
You know?
Is that there's been a lot of people whose lives have been positively affected by the site. And at the end of the day, that really makes it worth the trouble, is I know that it's something important. Now, like I said, I have people who diss me, but that's they've always existed. I wrote a huge rant about those kind of people, the people who just don't find any joy in accolades. They find joy in tearing things down. And that's fine. You know, I used to smash mailboxes when I was 5. But, you know, after a while, you're like, why the hell am I smashing mailboxes? Hey, what happened to my mailbox? You know, that kind of thing. My fucking mailbox!
Hey, why don't I get any mail?
I hate you, God! In terms of people, I take a lot of inspiration from people who are affected by it and people who do things. Sometimes people send me stuff that I didn't have. Again, tends to be local, but I didn't have it. Up it goes, and that's wonderful. And, you know,
I find I that's one of the great pleasures I get in life. And now that I'm doing more traveling, I'm speaking at a convention in Cleveland this coming weekend called Nauticon, which is this hacker slash art convention. And I'm speaking on 100 years of the computer art scene with Radman of Acid Productions. And that's going to be a fun talk. I'm going to talk about everything from the first art that they found people were doing in 1904 with typewriters up to the present day. I visited a guy, a lot of the like ASCII nudes I have, not the ones in the ASCII prong collection, which are newly made, but some of those date to the 50s, the 60s. And they were traded by ham radio operators across teletypes. So, you know, that stuff has been around for some time. I was surprised at some of the dates, like some are like 72, 68, 65.
Were these actual text files, or were they transcribed?
They were text, they were done by hand on teletype, and then by, you know, doing whatever work they did, they would save them onto tapes, and then the tapes could be used to send out the information again.
Uh-huh.
There's like this really strange stuff with ham radio. Like, it was only through this documentary I found out about something called slow scan TV, which I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know about slow scan?
Yeah, we were actually messing around with it over a phone conference.
I heard about slow scan. I was like, what? Oh my god! Where you could send pictures over radio. That's kind of kick ass. So that kind of stuff that exists, that's really amazing to me. And that's the kind of stuff. I mean, I tell people, my knowledge is wide, but it is not deep. People can kick my ass in any given subject.
Right.
If they try. If, for instance, we're talking about current text scenes, I'm sure the gentleman from Dig could kick my ass telling me what are the real big ones. But I can kick his ass talking about that, and Fidonet, and Riddy, and, you know, so on. So yeah. I'm good that way, but I never act like I am the world expert on all things. Because you can't be. If you don't specialize in some way, people will always know more than you, and you should never act like you know more than them. You don't. Just because you know about subject A doesn't make you an expert in subject B. And so, yeah, doesn't happen.
I actually read the tutorial written by one of the guys who started doing the art over hand teletype machine.
Right.
And it's amazing. He said he could just set it up on his typewriter, teletype machine, and just visualize, like, the line, what character he was going to use to represent that part of the picture.
Yes. Yeah, the hand digitizations are insane. But it's what you had to do.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's what's so great about it, is that people working under adverse conditions is probably the most inspiring, creative part of the whole process. And what do you do when what's going to come across can only come across in 300 baud, and you only have 65 characters in which to do it? You do things. You come up with ideas. And then someday somebody comes up with a 256 character set, like they did with the IBM, and you expand into that. And then somebody else comes up with, EGA. You could do it, this five colors, and you could do them with this resolution, and you work with that. Until now, you get
basically no limits nowadays.
Yeah, there's no limits, and then what happens is they're running into a problem, because now the problem was always, well, what do you do about, where do you take it? And the answer is probably to aim towards content instead of technical feasibility. And you're going to start seeing computer-generated movies, I think, where the kids, like, make really good movies that have plots that are completely computer-generated, because that's the only place it can go. They're not going to be able to make it look better, or not make it look much better. They're going to be able to accomplish it. And you can only, back when they couldn't do floating point, when the chip couldn't do floating point, and they had to do floating point as they were going, then it was something. But now it's like, well, every program that comes on, it has like an automatic 35 meg library with DirectX. And so there's not much challenge in that. Where's the challenge? Well, the challenge is, can you make a story? Can you make it tell a story? Can you make a character that's compelling and have it do something? So on. So that's where I think we're gonna see it. So I mean, Sometimes it might surprise people that I try to keep track of that kind of stuff, but the history is only one part of what I do. I mean, I like to know what's going on next, and I like to think that some of what I've learned from the history tells me what's going to go next. I'm not a futurist by any word, but I certainly take an interest in it. I like it. I love going to demo parties. I love going to what's new and seeing what people are up to. I think it's fascinating. The newest music, the newest graphics. That's just great. I'm on scene.org, downloading the newest demos just to see what they look like. I love that stuff. So, you know, it's definitely not a case of me saying, today sucks, the past is always where it's at. I'm just like, you know, there was a past. That's basically my position. Yeah, there was a past. It wasn't just always internet. You couldn't just tell that in the 1900s. So, now that's a really tough...
Here's a question for you.
Sure.
Do you think things are better now where everything is so fast and people take it all for granted? Or do you think it was better back then where everything, you know, was a lot slower and things didn't go out as far, but there was a lot more people participating and there was probably higher quality stuff?
Well, I could answer like a jerk and say, well, your question is wrong, but...
My question is wrong?
Yeah, your question is wrong. You phrased it wrong. I mean, basically, what you're saying there, right, is you're asking a question. You're saying...
Basically, what do you think is better, the way it was before, the way it is now?
Right, but the way you phrased the question was, which the way you think it is better? Now, when everything is sucked, or back then, when everything's great? I mean, back then, things were really fast. Because
back
then it kicked ass. It used to be when Abraham Lincoln was elected, it was 3 months before some parts of the country knew what he looked like. It was weeks before some of them knew that he had won. Right? I mean that was it. So you can imagine when the telegraph comes along, and a phone call, a 5-minute phone call on a phone, transatlantic, would cost you the equivalent of $300. Very expensive. But it was miraculous. Instead of a 4-month trip on a shitty boat with no, you know, cruise control or hot tub, you could now tell England, we have 5. Do you want to sell them at 10 or 20? And they could tell you immediately. It was miraculous. And it was so fast. Just cross country, everyone knew. So when Riddy or teletype falls into the hands of people and they can sit in their house, they don't have to travel anywhere, and now they can send these text messages to people and they know it, or they can talk to them and hear their voice, and now they know. It's miraculous. And then people have 300 baud modems, and you don't even have to type it. You can have the program do it. That's miraculous. And then 1200, 2400, 96, and so on. And now people are like, woohoo, I got 10 megabit into my house. People going, fuck you, I got gigabit coming. And the people in the gigabit are not going, you know, like when people are gigabit, they're going to go, man, how did we ever survive with cable modems? It's not going to be like that, because at the time it was the fastest. To me, the best time to be living is right now. Until, of course, we fuck up the planet and it explodes. But up to that point, it's perfect. I have no qualms about that. The future, things are progressing quite nicely, and things are getting better and better. You don't know how bad it is until you get the perspective. Like right now, it takes people about, you know, anywhere from 12 to 48 hours to download sigfiles.com's 600 meg file. That's about what it takes, you know, bit torrenting and so on.
Right.
Eventually, it will be a copy and paste operation. Right? It's going to be, right? It's going to be
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
So you're going to go, you know, copy, paste, now it's in Florida. And that's going to be great, and we're going to enjoy it. And by that time, they're going to find another great way to fuck it up and create, you know, high definition, double high definition.
Three-dimensional movies.
You're going to have, you know, full movie things that, you know, are on full widescreen, or you're going to have... constantly running full-color panoramic shots of this part of the Eiffel Tower, you know, or they're going to map the world down to, like, the inch, and that's going to be a file, you know, it's world.zip, and you're going to just grab it or something. You know, they'll find ways to fill that. They already are. I mean, you really, you know, you see how far we've come, but I definitely have to say, when you're there back then, it's incredible. GIF files were, like, kick-ass. CHIP files created these color images that downloaded. They were beautiful. You couldn't believe that you were getting color like this on your machine. Now, you look at these things, you'd be like, you're crazy. Your scanner broke, dude. Take it to the service man. You know, you compare that to a JPEG, and people go, well, JPEG is the, you know, is crap. How about a ping? How about a, you know, TIFF? Why don't you just copy and paste TIFF? Same thing.
I can comment on this. I think back then, it was more, at least from a programming standpoint, it was more about elegance, because you had a very limited set of resources to work with.
Right.
And whereas nowadays, we have pre-packaged, you know, what I want to call engines or generators that you can just plug in whatever you need, and it, you know, who cares how much memory it takes up, it's going to do whatever you want it to do.
Right. But that's a classic problem you experience anyway. I mean, for instance, if you've ever gone up against an early 19th century, or I'm sorry, late 19th century, early 20th century machine, and you look at how they're built compared to now, they built them so much better in terms of heaviness and durability, because that was what they wanted. They wanted to make sure it would last forever. Now they don't do that. That's not a vector that has proved to be profitable. You don't want to build something that lasts 100 years. You want something that's really kick-ass for 6 months and then gets replaced. And that is an intention. We certainly have the capability to build things even more durable than they were back then.
Right.
But the vector isn't there. And the same thing with programming. Yeah, it pisses me off that you have people who are programmers who think they're the shit because they have a word processor that only takes 17 megs of memory. You know, I mean, yeah, I look down upon them and think of them as dog shit. On the other hand, they wrote it in a very short period of time. They wrote it to spec. It works. And that time turnaround is much more important to them at that point. That's just what, it's hard to, you know, like they say, there was a game conference, and they pointed out that the period of time from when they first create games, from like 1971 to now, processing power has increased by the factor of a million.
Wow.
So they've had a lot of space to work with it. And yeah, they start to say, with this kind of turnaround time, we need to have, you know, pre-made libraries. Well, as soon as you do a pre-made library, things are going to be inefficient. Nothing's going to be a little man with a little code, you know, etching byte by byte over to make the absolute fastest code. But on the other hand, that little man is going to take 6 fucking months, and by that point, it's going to turn out you need 5 more features because everybody's added that feature. So they make a choice, and it's a good choice for some things. On the other hand, there is a certain pride and elegance that we've always liked as people and as programmers, and you respect that. It's kind of the difference between, you know, people look at my stuff, right? I'm going to make this movie. It's taken me 3 years. It's taken me 20-some-odd grand. It's taken me, I've driven or flown literally tens of thousands of miles, and I will produce a product. There are other people who would do the same thing, not the same way, but do basically a functioning, pretty good documentary in about 3 months. Because that's how, you know, it won't be accurate in the same way. It won't have this information the same way. It'll miss people that I think are vital, but it'll get done. And people, and there is a certain group which they're trying for, which they'll be quite happy with it. They won't know any better, and fine. And everybody's happy, they make their money, the people get what they think is information, and you're done. So, you can't call them evil, you can't call them lesser. They've just got to, they just think of it a different way than you do. And if you don't, you know, that's a problem in hacker communities anyway, you know, the my way is best. And I'm not even just thinking outside of the box. The whole concept of boxes is fucked, and you're a box fucker for thinking about boxes. You know, that's just the best of the way life is in that culture.
One of the reasons why hackers are so anti-Microsoft, because that's the approach Microsoft takes, as any big corporation would, is to survive in today's economy. You know, the
plug and play approach.
You still there, Jason?
Jason. Jason has left the building. Jason. Okay, well, I guess we lost our guest.
And it's probably about a good point to wrap up the show. It's been about, at least, it's been over 2 hours.
Maybe like a few minutes, I guess he comes left on.
Yeah, we could do that.
So we can count it off or something. Right.
Hey, Fabio, still here?
This is like,
lost an hour.
This is like, we lost him a while ago.
This is the after hours version of the show. Quality really doesn't matter as much.
This is actually technically the after laser show.
Oh, that was funny.
What's that?
Yeah, it's Jason.
Hey.
I got cut off.
Oh.
The summary of whatever I said was something brilliant. How about that?
There you go.
Something so insightful that it actually caused the Motorola to crash.
They didn't want it to get out.
Yeah.
I just found out that a Motorola uses more energy than it sucks in when it's plugged into the wall. Shit. All right. Well, anyway, we must be over time at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it must be like, what, 3 in the morning or something?
12:35.
Yeah. Seeing 2 hours of Jason Scott, all Jason Scott all the time. What's your 1 hour format?
No, we don't have a format.
Yeah, this is all
free. We gauge for no less than an hour.
Okay, if you want to, you can split it into a two-parter. Will Jason go on with what he's talking about? Will he ever stop talking?
Find out next week.
Find out next week. Will this bastard ever stop talking?
Find out next episode, which will probably be tomorrow.
Is there nothing he won't fucking expound on for 2 straight hours?
No, that's cool, man.
I can't believe we're recording.
I wish more guests would do that.
I can't believe we're recording a 2.5-hour show on a voicemail.
Yeah.
Good God.
Is there anything else?
Are you on to the next subconference?
Yes, I am.
Excellent.
I'll be there. Without a doubt, I'll be the guy with the goatee and the bad attitude.
Oh, trust me. I met you before.
Oh, excellent.
I'm the one at BigBarrelSucks.com. Do you remember that?
You're the guy with the beard?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I had no idea. But you're like one of my favorite stories. You guys are talking about people who got inspired. You were one of my favorite
stories. That's why I brought that up also.
I didn't know you were the Burrell Sucks guy. Burrell Sucks is one of my favorite things. The pencils were fucking inspired.
Yeah, I'm working on a new project nowadays on schoolhigh.com. Did I tell you about that one?
No.
Basically, you take the project nationwide.
Oh, excellent.
97,000 schools in the U.S., and they're all going to be one master form. About a week before it's in beta.
Yeah, be careful. The one thing about that, of course, is when it never leads to Mrs. Davis blows cock on weekends. And then Lionel Esquire, Davis's lawyer, comes knocking.
Yeah.
That's your biggest problem, because your main audience are high school students.
Yes, very much so.
That's your biggest problem and your greatest thing. You will have great things happen, and you will have horrifying things happen. Be sure not to add a dating section.
Why not?
There's always pros and cons to running a site like that, which has the people aspect. You'll notice that there's not a whole lot of commentary sections on textiles.com.
Yeah.
Because it gets me very nervous about, you know, people just being able to, you know, one of the reasons my blog, I hate that word, my weblog, ASCII.textfiles.com, has no comments on it, is because I work hard to write these essays, and then somebody can just come along with one line and go, man, you blow donkey balls. And that's the extent of their contribution.
Yeah.
So I don't do it. That's the personal thing I do. I say, make your own site, talk about how much I suck.
Right.
That's fine with me. But anyway, no, I was so impressed with your pencil thing, because I don't know, that was just such a, you know, having these pencils with your URL on them, that was such
a brilliant. Can you explain what that is? Because I haven't heard of this, and probably most of the listeners.
Okay, this is a really small project that I was playing with a few years back, but I had a falling out with my high school, and the administrator locked me in his office one day and told me how I was a worthless nothing, and that I'd never amount to anything in life, and that I need to stop, you know, trying to be such a rebel that he owns me. And I went home, I was like, what can I do to get back to this guy where he can't, you know, give me trouble for? So I made a website, and I spent a lot of money promoting it. Made a bunch of pencils and say, like, me and my high school was Burl. Made a bunch of pencils that said Burl Socks on them and had the website address. And it all leads back to a website you made about, wasn't it that company you made that about?
Harvard Net Sucks.
Yes. I had listened to a speech he had, I think it was DEF CON 7 or something.
Yeah, 8, I think. 8 or 9.
And I was like, that's a good idea, you know? And it pretty much inspired me to do the website. And it's actually leading to bigger and better things. I have a nonprofit organization now, I'm working on schoolhigh.com, and it's all good.
Excellent.
About 2 weeks before that's out, I'll give you an advance peekaboo if you want.
It's funny to me that you would be inspired by Harvard Net Sucks, the speech, because the speech is about getting sued for it.
Well, yes, but when you get sued, it brings massive amounts of attention to your project.
No, you could say that, yeah.
And there's no such thing as bad media.
That's true. I guess, sorry. Except for when it's reporting your own death.
Yeah. Think of that.
Your sad, miserable death. Oh, boy. What could happen here? I was just happy that somebody, it's one of my favorite pictures, it's the picture we got together. That's back when my hair was long. Yeah.
Looks like a clean in that picture.
I love that picture. I'm like, see this kid? He was inspired by me.
Yeah.
You know, I bump into some kids. I've never had to give an autograph, but I've certainly had to talk to kids about, you know, this or that or the other thing. I remember there was some kid in Florida used to write me, and he just literally wrote to me like a pen pal. And said, I'm in the school, what happened here, what do you think? And I give him my advice.
You're very inspirational.
I try to treat people with the same amount of respect that I would have wanted to be treated when I was their age.
Now, whenever you first saw, I was sitting up at the network room, and you're like, you're using BBS. And I was like, wait a minute. The only one person I knew who asked a curse like that.
Well, that's the thing. There was some other event like that where some kid wanted. Oh, that's right. Some kid mailed me for his school project, and his school project was write a letter to somebody who you admire and you think has been a success, and ask for them. You know, it's basically to teach you how to write a letter. And
right.
The kid wrote to me and said, you know, you're inspiring and you're my, you know, you're a success. Could you write back, please, by mail? So I did. I first double checked on the kid to make sure he was real and that they weren't trying to get a DNA sample from him. And then, you know, he was at the address that he claimed he was, and I could see his parents had a business and they had a son and he was a kid's name, and so I said, okay. And I mailed back the kid and told him what I thought my definition of success was. And I'll be damned if I can remember exactly what I wrote, but it was mostly about sticking to. You know, the big thing with textfiles.com is not so much that I did it, it's that I kept doing it. And over time, I end up being it. I become the dependable thing. That's where the real. And then people say, well, I better give him my 300 files because this is the place to put it. And then you grow. If you as a group, I always preach this as much as I preach anything. If a few people just get together and maintain and keep things going, they can do anything. They can change things in a major way across time. But it's going to take you a couple years. And that's usually more than most people can spare. If they learn to compartmentalize, if they learn that, like, instead of, you know, if you want to become the most famous, most famous Flash designers of a certain type, cartoon Flash, like Homestar Runner.
Good stuff.
That's just two guys. That's Matthew and whatever Chapman. That's these two brothers. Right? One does the Flash, one does the voice. And he's good. But they kept at it. They kept to their what they did. They came out constantly with new content. People kept coming. They grew. Now, I mean, you know, their most recent one, like Strong Bad number 99 or 100 or something like that.
Level of 100.
The one where he sings. The one where they go, you know, it's like 98 or 99. They're like, what would you do if you ran the world? And he's like, oh, the poops and the would talk. That song is written by They Might Be Giants for them. They're so popular that They Might Be Giants writes them a song. So they can do it. And all it is two brothers in Atlanta who just kept to their guns. Same thing with Penny Arcade. Every week, every day. And after a while, they're one of the most popular sites on the net. And I'm sure they live off what they make off it. So you know, that's my big thing I tell people. Just stick with it. Compartmentalize it if you got to. Just spend 2 hours a week on it, but make sure it's every week. And then you'll do it. You'll be dependable. And then when people start insulting you, then you know you've really made it.
There you go.
Because when this person insults you, that's because they know everyone they're talking to knows you.
They're jealous.
Yeah. Well, no, maybe not jealous. I mean, sometimes I really do suck. Sometimes I do pick fights I shouldn't. I just go in and I just fucking get on somebody's chest with my knees and start pounding their face for no good reason for hours on end. I've had that problem before because I'm so intense, and if somebody insults something that's a particular sore spot or something. Calling me fat is a really good one.
Oh,
I hate it when they call me fat. Fucking Atkins, I've been on for 3 fucking months.
Does that work?
Huh?
Is that working for you?
Well, yeah, so does not eating. I
mean, that's a good point.
Atkins is okay, the secret, that's good, it's good. We've gone from, what do you think the history of teletypes was to... So what do you think of the possibility of Atkins?
Oh, did you listen to number two? The conversation shifts like 20 times.
Atkins is a low-calorie diet. All right? It's a low-calorie diet. If you look at what you eat, and you look at the calorie levels, it's a bunch of low-calorie food that fills you up. Eggs are 70 calories a piece. Meat is much less in terms of, you know, certain calories. Yeah, it's fat or whatever, but it keeps you down underneath 2,000 or whatever calories. So your body goes, oh, what the fuck? And starts... losing weight. I mean, nothing beats having an active lifestyle.
Right.
But I don't have an active lifestyle.
You know, most of the people listen to this radio show.
Right. My certain, that's right, except for this one really thin, wiry hacker listening to this on his MP3 Walkman going, fuck you! Fuck you, man! I'm looking at the mirror about tomorrow. Actually, if you want an inspiring version of that Rad Man of Acid, holy shit, that guy's got. Same thing with, Swamp Rat, a CDC. I mean, both of them are like athletic guys. They turned around their lives. They turned around their lives at one point and they just said, God damn it, I'm going to work out. I'm going to take care of myself. And they
went to the motivation to do that.
It's just a few guys like that, though. There's not a many, but man, oh man, they're so inspiring. Bradman, if you look at pictures from him in 98, look at him now, it's like, oh my God. You know, he's in great shape and he runs marathons now. He bitches about the ones where this one marathon he runs where he runs up a mountain. I'm like, man, that's tough. I'm like, looking at a mountain makes me sweat. Thinking about mountains causes me to sweat. But anyway, you know, but that's another example of maintaining, and that's a tough thing. The you know, following through. There were times I had to sit there in front of a directory of 100 issues of a thing I couldn't give a shit about. And I was like, gotta describe it. And I described it. Or, just recently, I'm re-describing all of these art packs, these anti-art packs, because Radman gave me like 400 I didn't have. And I'm sitting there describing them, ripping them apart, looking for the file ID.biz, figuring out what it is, and I'm like, what am I doing? And I wrote a script that looks through for the file IDZ and gives me a general idea, and then I describe it immediately after, and I was able to get through, you know, 100 an hour after that. But it's just that sticking to it, going through it, because at the end of the day, you got to have it. Otherwise, someone's going to come along and do it better than you, and you did nothing. I'm a fan of that. I'm a fan of working it through. I don't know. Unfortunately, again, hacker subculture is not a very efficient place to gain moral code. It's way too variant.
Yeah.
And,
very big.
Yeah, and there's a certain sense, there's a certain myopia. People, hackers don't like context. It pisses them off. And hackers don't generally like to follow, some sort of imposed moral order because it's always worked for them to fuck the moral order up to that point. That's where you get attention whores from. If a person acts like an asshole and everyone pays attention to them, well, where's the negative side of that? They'll keep doing it. They'll do weirder and weirder things because it's a feedback loop. Same thing with me. I'm doing more and more work because I'm enjoying it so much. The day that I'm doing it, people are like, nobody likes it. They're like, oh, God, now you have too many files. You have to stop, you freak. Look at that freak. Then maybe I would stop, but I don't see that happening. So. Anyway, Jason Scott's Guide to Life.
Brought to you by TextFiles.com.
Your source for text files, now brought to you by Red Bull. Red Bull, it gives you wings and wares.
And wares. You might get sued.
Wares!
You'll probably get sued for that.
That's right.
And Dallas, got any more questions?
Wrap it up.
Always wrap it up for your protection, Trojan men.
Right. So, what's your opinion on chocolate donuts?
Chocolate donuts?
Yes.
Not when you're an Atkins.
Yeah. Atkins donuts. I'm always telling people, you know, it wasn't Atkins Robbins ice cream. 31 flavors with no sugar. When you're 18 to 25, your metabolism is at its peak. The whole world is in front of you. You can fall off things and get right back up again. And I encourage people to take advantage of that. To do things that are like a little dumb, not super dumb. Maybe I can fly today. I think I'll jump into a pool from the fifth floor of this hotel. But you know, I mean, you know, stay up a little bit too late, go out a little bit too much, make a little bit too much noise, because after that point, your metabolism goes to shit, and you look at a donut and you gain 3 pounds. And so you might as well have a great time. There's nothing to be said for living in the now and having a great time. And never, never turn away from a social event because you have something. There is, with almost no exception, I have discovered, with very, very, very few exceptions, there's very little going by on the screen that isn't going to go by on the screen again tomorrow. That's your television screen, your computer screen. It's going to be there tomorrow. You know, somebody. The guy everybody hates just walked into the channel. Well, guess what? He's going to walk into the channel again next week.
Yeah.
And you're going to get the pound of shit out of him there. So don't stay home and miss the movie you said you were going to go to with your friends, or that you were going to go out to the lake and have something to drink. Go to it. Because that doesn't go, you know, people go away. Things don't go away. If assholes like me, they can sure of that.
Sounds like my great email.
Which?
They just never go away.
Which never go away. That's right.
Oh yeah, that's another thing. You have a spam archive. Spam over the years.
I thought about it. But what do you call it? I'm not comfortable with it. It's too much effort. It's cute. It's interesting, actually. Problem is now is that now it's really fragmented.
Yeah. Plus it's out of control.
There's no version control you could do. You don't get like the Viagra email now. I mean, they go out of their way to hurt each other. There's something called spam radio, actually, where they take spam mail and they broadcast it over trance music with it reading it.
Actually, interesting enough, I kept calling up a spam company and playing that radio station to them.
Oh, really? Excellent. I don't like where it's gone with spam, but I mean, that's just a natural problem. It will solve itself. It will be solved in our lifetime. Just like a lot of other things were solved in our lifetime. One of the things that will probably happen is better control of... They took advantage of the fact that there was a period of time when you could have an email address and you could give it away, like you would give away anything. Now you won't. Now people will have tightly controlled, gated email that will only accept certain things and channel to communication and so on and verification and so on. So I expect that we'll find a solution in technology. We'll never find one in law and politics.
There are solutions already. It's just that they're not watching it.
Yeah. White lists, Bayesian filters. There's always interesting things going on. So, and in the process, actually, of doing Bayesian filters for spam, I think we're producing interesting, refined technology that will go elsewhere. Like, once we get really good with bays and filters, I think you'll see things where they actually sit on television, voice recognize what's going by, and figure out shows you want to see. Or radio. Or whatever, you know? You never know what's going
to
happen next.
Or listen to your phone calls and report suspicious activity to the government. Oh, wait, they already have that.
That's right. There's always going to be something, I don't know, there's always going to be interesting things to me where it goes on. I never grow tired or bored of things. My only regret at being 34 is that I'm not 24, but I won't get 10 more years of watching this. So I'm, you know, as far as things go in life, I'm happy. I'm really happy with all this. And I think that's the attitude you got to have. So there you go.
And that's it in a nutshell.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule, Jason, for coming on.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for letting me take the time out of all of your schedules and, by extension, all the listeners' schedules, all the ones who got here right to the end.
All of lizard voicemails,
yep.
Storage space.
The ones who are like, Jesus Christ, shut up. That's the question I always wait for in these interviews. So the other question is, do you ever shut the fuck up?
Has anybody ever asked you that question in an interview?
In an interview, no, but in conversation, yes.
You would try to be more polite in the interviews.
Yeah, well, people are like, well, I mean, you know, they will, you know, they're happy to have me on, but they won't, you know. Also, I don't get interviewed by voice all that much. Email interviews.
You try to have a standard for me, just copy and paste.
Yeah. No, I try to do something. I don't consider it a privilege to talk to me. I consider it a gift to me to listen to what I have to say. So I always do my best to make sure each one is a special job and cover something different or something. I certainly didn't discuss half this stuff with Radio Freak America. Also, Duel would have cut me the fuck off a long time ago. You would have been like, well, what technical difference? Click. Well, we lost Jason Scott, but everyone have a good time with freaking, keep America alive. Corporate sucks.
Corporate sucks.
So, yes, that's right. Corporate sucks. Always read Snopes.com before you power that fucking email, you moron. How's that? Excellent.
Nice. Anything anybody want to promote?
Yeah, announcement. Yes. BGX's weekly Wardell project has got its 100,000th member.
Nice.
They go all the way up to 100-210 now.
Nice.
You have cost somebody an awful lot of money. Actually, you've cost an enormous amount of people a little bit of money. I guess that's what's going on there.
Anybody else? Low tech,
I just want to promote my sign. Again, check out gig9.com.
Oh, nice. Speak up.
Telco inside, telco-inside.sponge, SPUNGE.ORG. Telco inside.
Nice. Anybody else?
As always, where you can get the archives of the show, hackmedia.net/hacksaur.
Right. Anything else on hackermedia.net you want to promote?
No, there's really not much worth mentioning quite yet. I'll have a, you know, actual functioning setup soon.
Nice. Don't worry. It'll never stop. It's a current project. Our project will never stop. It'll be another fucking audio text files.
Just keep collecting.
Yeah, it's the way to do it.
Our drug streams are only getting cheaper by the day.
Yeah.
By the minute.
Yeah.
You go to salescircular.com, click on your state, it'll tell you the greatest deals you've ever seen.
Are they on Price Watch?
Oh,
cool.
Oh, yeah. Salescircular.com keeps track of all the sales circular each week with those weird sales that they run in the stores for about 9 minutes. That's where I got 250 gigs for $160.
Nice.
No mail-in rebate.
Wow.
Things like that just show up for like 9 minutes, and it's beautiful. I always encourage people to go to that. That's a great thing. I always encourage people to use 1-800-555-TEL. I survived off of that. In the documentary, I'd be in the middle of Upper Bumfuck's nose Utah, and then I wouldn't know where the hell I was, and I could find out where I was and get to the next site.
Yeah, does your box have a stick retention store kind of service?
No.
No?
They removed that, in fact, the whole copy of the textfiles.com phone information hotline is now a .zip on audiothetextfiles.com.
Excellent.
That's what finally inspired me to put up audiothetextfiles.com, actually. I was like, wow, I'm getting lots of audio data.
Mm.
So, you know, what's the next thing?
There you go.
Try to think if there's any other sites that I should suggest to other people besides my own.
Well, when you first came on, you mentioned you owned, what was that site called?
BitchToTheCurb.com.
Yeah, what'd you do there?
It was one of those things when I worked at an internet company, and we kept threatening to send people to BitchToTheCurb.com. So finally I registered it, and I just don't have the heart to not keep renewing it. So it became kind of a little collection of fun links, like those links you always hear about, and you never hear about them again. This is all like pre-blog, so of course now in blogs that shit gets passed around all the time. Ooh, someone made a washing machine of a Commodore 64, somebody made a paper mache version of a TiVo or whatever. You know, it's, you know, stupid things. The one thing I am really proud of, though, is that the name of the organization that owns it is Get Out the Damn Car Woman.
Very nice.
That's my one bit of pride. BitchToTheCurb.com. I used to have InappropriatelyDressed.com. Way back when, you know, registering a domain name was a big deal and having a grand old time at it. That was, you know, those days are pretty much over. Now people are registering things like, you know, I own IStoleMyHouse.com, but I haven't done anything with it. And there's RespectCopyrights.org, which the MPAA owns, and I own DisrespectCopyrights.org.
For the total fund?
Yeah, completely.
You know, I didn't know this was done already. I was going to do that website.
If you go to DisrespectCopyrights.org, yeah, I got a whole rant about copyright law.
You should take the exact same format. And,
I do.
Four reasons to support copyright, like four reasons why the MPAA blows.
That's exactly what I have.
I've got to go there tonight. I'm going to check this stuff out.
Okay. Well, before I drag this thing off to its third hour, a Star Wars special edition of Hacker Shows, thanks for inviting me on. It was a real surprise. And somebody emailed me the link to what it is because I can't remember URLs to save my life, especially when there's an X in them.
I'll email it.
And if there's a tilde, forget it.
Nice.
Yeah. Just keep in mind, remember, tildes and URLs, they're kind of like neon on your car. They're very weird looking, but they don't indicate quality.
Yeah. No ground effects.
Yeah. Don't be thinking that tilde makes you a master of anything.
Yeah.
Tilde means bitch of.
Bitch of Comcast.
Yep.
Nice.
Bitch of Comcast. I am Yakdor, bitch of Comcast. I am Dark2, bitch of home, .com. So, keep your own damn URL. They're cheap now. Go to GoDaddy.
Yeah.
5 cent domains that last 100 years.
And as always, check the major factory at 206-888-5819. That's it. Episode 3, done. It's a wrap. Later.
That's something you guys.
Do we have any outro music? Should I just hum something?
Do you want to kick the intro, which will be the outro? It'll be our aloha.
Hello, it's Sunson Peppermint and DTMI.
Oh, yeah, play that. There we go.
Okay.